This episode is brought to you by Molecule. For $75 off your first order, visit molecule.com and enter promo code GOT at checkout. That's MOLEKULE.com and promo code GOT. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we are here. It's been, it's been a couple weeks since we did the trailer one. But man, Game of Thrones hasn't been on the air for like a year and a half. We're 1 week away from the premiere, less than a week. And I'm super excited. We're going to be talking about a lot, mostly predictions. Kind of catch everybody up this week on where everybody's at in the world of Game of Thrones. Where on the continent of Westeros, or I don't know, some people are on Essos, yeah. Melisandre's probably out there somewhere.
And I'm Aaron.
Oh, you didn't say you're
rusty
Aaron?
As fuck. Did I?
I thought you already said it.
No,
but
I don't think
may
either
have blown
one
past
us.
It. If you're new to this show, I'm Jim. That's Aaron. We're going to be talking a lot about our predictions for season 8, the final season of Game of Thrones. Aaron, where are we starting today?
So there's a couple places. Well, I think that what I'd like to do is talk about kind of like the meta conversation around the season, like what the stakes are, kind of like our hopes, thoughts on like some things we know about it, like the extended nature of the episodes, things that Gurm has publicly stated about what he intends the end of Game of Thrones to be. And then we can talk like, you know, we're going to do like a death pool / prediction / rundown of where everybody's at, all the principal characters of Game of Thrones. And we'll consider some feedback. Does that sound like a good time?
That sounds awesome.
Okay. So this is the close of the biggest television series, I think, in history, by virtue of its international stature and standing. I saw at the end of last season something like 100 million people a week estimated watch this show through some, you know, by a hook or crook, literally by subscribing to HBO or pirating online. I don't think that's really precedented. You have to go to like live sporting events like the World Cup or the Super Bowl to get numbers bigger than that. So there are a lot of stakes riding on it, obviously. First and foremost, I think HBO / Bald Move. We both have a vested interest in this season turning out well, right?
Of course.
Like,
yeah.
If we don't like it, we're not going to bullshit you and tell you we do. But, like, we really, really hope it's good. Mm-hmm. Because we both, presumably, you know, Game of Thrones has been very good for us. It's by far our largest show. Just like HBO can say the same thing. They are going to, they've already greenlit one prequel that takes place thousands of years before the time frame of Game of Thrones. Started casting it. They got showrunners attached to it. That's going to be happening probably next year. If this thing doesn't land in a satisfying way and people walk away feeling full, let's say, of Game of Thrones, that's bad for HBO, probably bad for Bald Move. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I want to see this show succeed. I was a little bit scared last season with a couple of small missteps. You know, I rewatched the final season coming into this podcast, or the final season, last season. And those things still stood out to me as kind of shitty.
It's not even like it felt like there's two wrong steps that they took.
And there was some weird stuff with Arya.
Right.
And there was some weird stuff with going to the wall.
Right.
North of the wall.
Yeah.
With dragons. But other than that, like, I found myself riveted by last season. So if they can avoid a couple of small missteps this season, which is both hard and I think also easy because we have a couple of big battles probably that are coming up, which take up a lot of time and look really cool and get people excited, me included. So that makes it pretty easy to land those episodes. But what they really have to do is tie the story up in a nice bow,
right?
As much as you want Game of Thrones to end in a big fancy bow, and that's tough. So I'm a little bit worried, but I'm also super excited.
I'm going to share with you my hopes for a dream of satisfactory ending.
Okay.
I think that, well, so what's your idea, and I might be putting you on your spot, but what's your idea of your, like, the least workable season of Game of Thrones that we've had thus far?
Was it six? The heavy Sand Snake one was.
Yes.
Was it five
season
or six?
Five.
I thought so.
And I think that one of the reasons that was a problem is because the Double D's, Dan and David, had all of their characters, tither and yon on errands that George Martin had sent them on, that they were not privy to the exact resolution of these plot lines. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, oh shit, we don't really know what we're doing. We're kind of doing a tap dance here. We need to hammer this story back into a shape that we can tell solo. I feel like, and then season six, I think, was a kind of a comeback. Not that season five was terrible, but season six, you know, had felt like a lot more smooth ride going for it. Not that there, I got to say that, like, every probably season past three or definitely four has some problems to it, but, like, I felt like six held together. I feel like maybe seven is the same thing, where they really just are down to the bullet points of what George was wanting to do. And they had these guys similarly, like Danny's still over in Essos and John's dead at the wall. And all this stuff had to come together and be shifted in a way that probably doesn't hold together under strict scrutiny. But now everyone's where they need to be. You know, Cersei's down in the throne and she's essentially the only one. You know, Euron's over in Essos fetching an army. Qyburn's doing Qyburn things. Everyone else is at Winterfell or headed there. And then you got the Night King that's at the wall and moving south. So it's like, I feel like now all they got to do is the big battles and the crowd pleasing scenes and the inspiring,
there's a lot of that, yeah,
the inspiring sacrifices and deaths. It's like, I don't see any more like plot based potholes that seem like looming ahead, like oh wow, how are they going to get this, or the this person's a vital part of the plot, how, you know, like,
yeah, there's maybe one big one that I still see, which is kind of like the triad of like Danny, John, and Sansa, and like it kind of all revolves around who's going to rule, how the ruling is even going to work in this world that Danny's building. Like, there's some weird stuff in there that I'm, like, curious how they're going to resolve all the character beats, but also...
But you don't have to introduce new characters or
get them to
a different continent.
No,
it's
much easier than, you know, the world building that has been done in the past well.
Because this is also, we're in the opposite of world building. We're world destroying. We're bulldozing worlds. We're going to be killing lots and lots of people, decimating lots of locations. And I feel like, you know, the Double D's are pretty good at Hulk smash type of stuff. moving on, unless you have other things to say, I was going to move on to the stakes of one George R.R. Martin. So George looks bad in every scenario unless Game of Thrones is like nails it to a T. Everyone says that this is great. It's a fitting ending. I feel like all eight seasons were worth it. And the Double D's are giving credit to George Martin for the conclusion in publicity, right?
Everything, I think he looks bad in any scenario at this point.
Okay. I'm saying best case, though.
Best case, maybe he can salvage something by this show ending really well on his bullet points and then finishing those fucking books and having it end just as well, if not better, than the show.
Right. Like a
That's
richer...
That's the only way to salvage it.
A richer, less clunky, less rushed through, everything elegantly fitting together type of... but then he actually had, like you said, like... The end state of this season, if it's good and if it's great and if people are, like, you know, doing the right genuflections to Martin's throne, then I think he comes off like he's not hurt by this process. If this thing is like meh or worse, or like, I don't know what to make of like some of the kind of like rumors you've heard of maybe strained tensions between like HBO and Martin and the showrunners and whatnot, but like if there's like kind of shade being thrown in those kind of circumstances, man, I mean, there's going to be diehards are going to be waiting to see his version of the book, but there's going to be a lot of people who, I mean, I've heard from several people who are waiting to read the whole series for the conclusion of this show. Presumably, if the conclusion of this show is bad, interest of the two follow-up books is going to dry up, which, you know, I don't know. I mean, like it's so weird that Martin, like, he's like Schrodinger's author. He is still possible to open up the box and people revere him as the greatest fantasy author since J.R.R. Or you could open that box and he's, you know, never finishes a series and he's remembered as the great what if. If he had focused up? What if he had stopped gardening and started pruning?
Yes. But that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, it seems like he's like his reputation might have stand to take the biggest hit on this, but I don't know. He probably hates all this conversation, and if I was in his shoes, I'd hate it too. But on the other hand, you gotta at least, George, understand why this is happening, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, you're not our bitch.
It's
I get it.
It's your own damn fault. It's right. Yeah, A, you're not a bitch. B, but we have, like, you can ignore all the criticism if you want to. That's fine. But you have to understand that it's going to happen with the scenario that you've set up, which is you're writing books. You're writing a shitload of books. You're editing books. You're co-authoring books. You're doing all kinds of writing projects, just not the ones that 100 million people want you to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, you're making your choices, and I respect that, but also, those choices are pissing people off.
And we're, I think, free to make comments on it as fans. That's kind of our right, too. So.
And as somebody who hasn't read the books and isn't going to read the books, even if this ends up being the best series of all times, which it has a shot to, that's already tarnished. Like, he's already lost everything that he could possibly hope to gain back from me, as far as goodwill goes, because
the man
he's
who
sabotaging,
will never read your series.
He's basically trying to sabotage one of my favorite shows. Like,
why do you say he's trying to sabotage it?
Because he signed on to write show, and not to hand over a loose outline of bullet points. Okay. He signed on to fucking see this thing through the end.
Because sabotage,
sabotage
is he gave him the wrong bullet points as a joke.
I mean, he might have. We don't know. The problem is we don't know.
Like,
he might have.
Like, he's sitting there on his word star, and he's like, okay, Jon Snow ventures north of the wall to get an ice zombie to show it to Cersei. Like,
that might have been the problem.
All right, so George, like, if this show goes gangbusters, I think everybody's going to be fine. But I do that's he's the one guy where if everything succeeds the season, there will still be the hot takes of Wither the Martin and all this. So that will be fun or not fun depending on your sympathies to the Germ. Let's talk about the cast. I was watching this weekend. Kit Harington do a pretty good job on Saturday Night Live and be really, really funny and just laying it all out there. At one point, he was in high heels and pasties. But like the sense in kind of some things he said during the monologue and all that stuff is a joke and all this stuff is kind of showmanship. But a lot of the themes of the, especially these people that have been there since the beginning and a lot of, like, you think about Maisie Williams, who have literally grown up on the show. There's this sense of like, man, we can't wait to see what happens next in our own careers. I don't know that the cast, I feel like they're the ones that are the safest in all this. Because nobody is going to say that the body of work that these people did in total, especially when you talk about the kids, especially when you talk about the relative unknowns that were cast and who have just fully embodied effortlessly this work. Like, I don't think there's any way that if this thing turns into a mild dumpster fire, that any of the actors or actresses get caught up in it.
No, okay. For sure. I mean, they've done everything they can.
Yeah.
One of my complaints about the series would most certainly not be the acting.
Right. I mean, even like I can't even imagine like a level of phoning in they'd have to do in a final season. And by all accounts, it's not. This is last season very hard to shoot and it's very grueling and there's a lot of action, which is tedious to do. So like it seems like they're really doing their part to bring it. Mm-hmm. So I think that in fact, I think that it's going to be really interesting to see all of these people go and populate the projects, kind of like it's interesting if you go watch like a Harry Potter and you see like, oh, it's a who's who of like this is like the next generation of British and Scottish and Irish and other European actors. This is like their this is going to be a huge injection of talent in Hollywood, is what I'm saying, once they get out from under these contracts.
Yeah, and the biggest people in this show have already done it.
Right, right.
Like, you look at Dark Phoenix, that's coming up, that's got, you know, she's, Sansa's all over X-Men.
Right.
Maisie Williams has done some stuff.
She did some X-Men-ish adjacent things. Misfits, I think.
Yeah, and there was some Netflix stuff she did.
She's done it. I think she did a Doctor Who appearance. She's done, but you know.
But Rob's been out there doing shit. Not all of it is hit, but apparently, you know, he's getting a lot of work. John's now doing his work.
Right. Emilia Clarke's been doing a lot of stuff here. Again, none of it really, like, I don't think has been like a huge breakout hit, but.
Where's my Davos? Where's my Davos in other
shows?
Where's
Davos at? I don't know.
Yeah. That's what I want.
So I think the cast is going to be fine. It's going to be exciting to see as they go out and do other projects. And I mean, the rest of our lives, we're going to be seeing these people pop up here, there, and elsewhere. Yeah. And then finally, we've already covered this, but the prequels. I think this is the one that has the most to lose from it. Like, if this is a bang up job and everybody's like, hot damn, I can't wait to revisit this world, then interest in the prequel is going to go through the roof. And you'll probably hear between this one and between the end of this season and beginning of the prequel season, you'll probably hear them greenlit one, if not two more, because the new HBO guy is crazy about content.
He is. He wants to release not just on Sunday, but Monday nights.
Every 7 days.
Oh, shit.
Every day for the faith of the seven. Sundays for the father, Mondays for the mother. Yeah, it's going to be that kind of thing.
I don't know if that's... Is that sustainable? You think the like, having 2-3 spinoffs at a time is going to be sustainable?
You know, if you'd asked me 10 years ago if Marvel could pump out 22 movies and an interest in Marvel remains an all-time high and, like, Endgame looks like it's going to be the biggest movie ever, I'd have said, yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
So, like, yeah, every once in a while you get these pockets of almost unlimited pop culture interest. Like, Zombies had, like, a decade-long run. Some say they're still on it. Like where the Americans start to flag, the Koreans take up, and like, have you seen Kingdom? Yes, I could see it. I could see it, but they have to, like Marvel has, like, out of those 22 films, 18 are good to excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are kind of like, eh, but, you know, not terrible. And there's one or two that are like kind of cover your eyes bad or boring or whatever. But like, you have to have that kind of batting record to keep people's interest and involved that much.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if HBO's got it. I mean,
it's weird too. Like, you, when you talk about the MCU, it's like all kind of tied in together. This is, but the universe that they're building is, I feel, so much broader and it spans so much more time. And like,
oh, sure.
It's just a bigger thing. So, like, are people going to be in for like a Children of the Forest prequel and also a Targaryen prequel? And
right.
Also, like, do they care as much about every element of the story as somebody might care about each of the characters in a Marvel cinematic universe? And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, you're right. The MCU is interconnected in the way that, like, you know, it's going to be connected and it's in the same planet. But, like, you're talking about the Age of Heroes, things that happened 4,000 or 5,000 plus years ago. You're not going to turn the corner in the Children of the Forest domain and there's Jon Snow with a ghost. It's just not going to happen.
It can't.
So,
although you might get a couple of three-eyed ravens in there, I don't know.
Well, the other thing is, like, if you go back the further back in time of Game of Thrones, you get the more wild fantasy it gets, and I think that's going to be an interesting hurdle for them to jump, because it seems like Game of Thrones got 100 million people watching it because it's not your average dragon and sword flick. In fact,
it certainly got me that way.
You don't even see dragons until the very last shot, the very last shots of the very first season. Like, you're 10 hours in before they whop you with the dragons coming out. So I feel like that people really got pulled into the deep political intrigue and all the character interaction and just the interesting human drama. And then they just layered the magic and stuff on top of it. Is it going to be a tougher sale when you literally are back to the Snarks and Grumpkin days?
It could be, yeah. I think that's why like the Targaryen stuff maybe interests me more, mm-hmm. because there could be a lot more politics involved.
Oh, as reading Fire and Blood Volume 1, there's a shit ton of politics.
Yeah.
To mine in the Targaryen family tree for sure. What about our thoughts on the extended episodes? Yesterday we went through and we can see the running time for all 6 episodes. And the first two are modest 50-ish minute affairs.
Pretty standard, yeah.
Then you get the 130, the 120s, the 127s, like all the last 4 episodes. So the last 4 episodes are approximately the total runtime of about 6.5 episodes of your standard Game of Thrones fare.
Yeah, those are going to be...
That's a lot.
Big. We know Miguel Sapochnik is directing a couple of these.
Yep.
We expect that there will be a Battle of Winterfell at some point, as we've seen in the trailers.
Right.
That stuff requires, like I said, time. And I don't know. I mean, I'm excited that the last 4 are super long.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need that time. It's like a 6-episode season is pretty damn short.
Right.
So to fill that out with, you know, a couple of half hours at the end of a few episodes for padding, to really narrow down on the end of this story, I'm cool with it.
I think there's almost unlimited positive reasons to be excited for longer episodes. I guess if I was going to try to play devil's advocate, I'd say if there are going to be any pacing issues with this final season, longer episodes will probably exacerbate that.
Yeah.
Is that how you say that?
Exacerbate, yeah.
The double D's are going to be exacerbating us slowly over the
course. Stay away from my exas.
That's the only thing I can think of. Like, I think about like if you got one 90-minute episode battle, and then you have another one the next week. Like, will that be eating too much chocolate fudge?
Yeah, they got to separate him.
But I don't really believe that because, like, honestly, if I thought, I'd be more worried if there's going to be like 8 episodes, all a 50-minute length, because then I'm like, oh, they really made some curious edits to do. Like the wildly varying lengths of time is almost like they are drawing lines around concrete points in a story that they want to tell, and they're giving those beats long, like, you know, enough time to develop and give them this kind of blockbuster epic feel. So mm-hmm. I think that they're all really good editorial reasons for having fewer longer episodes than more conventionally linked episodes. I think it'll lead to better pacing. But if I'm wrong on that, I think that's going to be the thing that's commented more. Like if any of these things drag or there's like a 5-minute scene to kind of lead, people are going to be getting their bitch on.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Thank you.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and we'll find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Okay. Also, one thing, one kind of clue, the only real clue we've had to go on other than what's on the screen is George gave an interview in 2015 where he said that he is going for a bittersweet victory, similar in feel to the end of The Lord of the Rings, where the bad guys are defeated, but the heroes are changed, and some of them are not going to be able to continue functioning the way they did before in the world they inhabit. There's the bittersweet. You win, world saved, but some of the people you care about have been damaged in ways that they can't repair. They've been killed. They've had to been sacrificed.
I mean, isn't that just the story of Game of Thrones? Like, I look at Sansa.
No.
She's been fucking damaged.
Bitter.
I look
it's
at
bitter.
Arya. She's
it's
been
bitter.
Damaged. Like,
it's been bitter. There's been very little sweetness.
Jamie's missing a fucking hand.
Like the Red Wedding would have been bittersweet if they'd able to smuggle out John's baby as everyone's dying and there's a hope for the future. Like, nah, it's just fucking bleak. So, like, I guess that's the thing I want to keep in our back pocket while we go on and have the further discussion of all our favorite characters and what we think is going to happen to them. So we got a ton of stuff to still get to talk about in the episode to come. But I also want to talk about the expectations for our coverage for this season, because, you know, obviously we're really excited. There's 6 weeks to cover all this stuff, and we want to be as comprehensive as we can. So every Sunday night, as soon as the episode finishes airing, we're going to be recording an instant take podcast. Our club members at club.baldmove.com are welcome to join and watch that recorded live. There'll also be an audience feedback segment for club members only, but we'll be releasing the instant take as soon as we're done recording and get it processed for everybody. So that comes out on Sunday night. Tuesday, we're going to be releasing a podcast that's our main coverage that we traditionally do. That's our deep dive into the episode itself, all the feedback, etc. And then Friday, as we've done in weeks before and seasons past, we're going to have the spoiler section where we can talk about very little bits of gleanings that we can look at the weird prophecies and extra information from the books and some of the satellite materials, and people can go wild on theorizing and stuff. That'll be on Friday. Then during throughout the 6 weeks of our Game of Thrones coverage, we're also going to kind of throw a little celebration for fantasy in general. We're going to have one of our patented super serious film fests. It's actually not patented.
We tried. They turned it down.
They said it was stupid.
You can't patent it. You might want to try copyright, though.
It was just stamped stupid. And it's what we do is it's a celebration of fantasy. We're going to be going back and looking at all the different cheesy swords and sandals and dragon based films from the 80s, the 90s, and the early aughts. We're getting our coverage started with Conan the Barbarian, starring, I almost said late great.
No, he's not late.
No, but he is great. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Long may he reign. We're going to be getting our coverage started with that. If you are a club member, we're going to have live watches of it. So Jim and I actually watched a movie and kind of make fun of it and talk about our experience with it. And then we'll also have a deep dive podcast, as like our traditional movie podcasts. So again, we're very excited about Game of Thrones, very excited about fantasy in general. And that's how we're going to be covering it for the next 6 weeks. We also have some housekeeping for Bald Move in general. This week on Bald Move TV, we're going to be giving first looks at new Netflix originals such as You vs. Wild, Black Summer, which is another attempt to revive the zombie genre.
Yeah, we'll see
how that goes. And the TV series Special. Bald Movies. Last week we checked out Pet Sematary. This week on Friday, or on Thursday rather, we'll be checking out the latest Hellboy installment. Or actually, I think it's a reboot. I'm not sure. It's got David Harbour from Stranger Things. It looks pretty good. I'm excited. Every Wednesday, Cecily and I are going on twitch.tv/baldmove and essentially playing through all of the Mario series ever. We've fought our way through the new Mario Brothers Wii U. We are currently playing Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And I'm not sure we'll be playing this week. Probably more Mario Kart, maybe some other Mario. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Will our marriage survive us playing these intense games? Tune in to twitch.tv/baldmove. Jim, you got some exciting pin-based news.
Yeah, so people who've been with us for a while might recall, I think it was season, was it six?
Five, I think.
Five, holy shit, it's been forever. Where we did a special t-shirt for Game of Thrones called House Snow, and it had the slogan, "We Know Nothing" on it. We've taken that slogan and that sort of motif and turned it into a pin. That's sort of like a spiritual successor to the shirt, I'd say. Right now, it's available on my girlfriend's website, who did all of the design herself and got these things manufactured. They're, I think, super impressive. Pin-Y.com. It's P-I-N-Y.com. We're not selling, like, those naked lady pins or anything. Mm. You know, the clicky ones that the Hawaiian skirt goes away.
It's the enamel pins.
Yeah, it's enamel.
Put it on
pins.
Your backpack.
Yeah, and I think they're hard enamel, which is the nicer enamel. They look really
nice.
You
don't want soft enamel. Not in your mouth.
It just leaks out.
Not on your clothes, not on your backpacks, not any of those things.
Yeah, so if you're interested in that, if you like enamel pins, she's got actually a whole bunch of designs up there right now, but the one we're focusing on is House Snow, obviously. So go check that out, pin-y.com.
And then finally, I promise we'll get to the content. I wrote two books. I'm so bored in the off-season of Game of Thrones and so obsessed that I wrote two books with a religious scholar about the cultures and religions of Westeros. You can get both volumes at godsofthrones.com and also check out really cool artwork that we commissioned. There's like some really neat pieces that Chase Stone made for us, and I'm pretty proud of it. godsofthrones.com. All right, let's talk about Game of Thrones. Okay, here is our review of where people are at and our death pool and our predictions for these characters, and we've kind of grouped them in what we think are logical categories. First up, John and Daenerys. John.
Oh, you mean Aegon?
Aegon Targaryen, Snow, and Daenerys Stormborn.
You mean
Targaryen.
Sand,
yeah. Yeah, Sam,
it all got thrown into confusion last season.
Thanks for that clarification, Bran.
Yeah. But he's not. He's the trueborn heir.
The boy that knows everything except for what a High Septon writes in his private diary. So there's a couple things to talk about here. Where do we leave them? They were engaging. They were doing some boat sex in the slow boat from King's Landing to Winterfell. Can't take a boat to Winterfell. Presumably,
no.
They go to White Harbor first, and yeah. Then they'd journey inland from there, and they'd take the sex wagon before taking residence in the sex tower.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we leave them. Tyrion's looking kind of like dour at this. We'll talk about him in a second. You already mentioned...
And importantly, they think that Cersei has their back in this fight against the Night King.
Yes. But they're fools.
And
also, Jaime's about to join them, and I'm sure... he'll be telling them.
How much will he tell them?
I mean, I feel like if Jaime doesn't do full on confessional, like why?
Yeah.
I mean, his leaving of King's Landing, which we'll be talking about him in a minute. Like, is very iconic, and it's very felt like a finality. Like, you know, as the first flakes of snow drop on King's Landing, he goes to where the true threat is and where the true heroes and the true chance at redemption are. There's a lot of talk last season, and there's been kind of, concern for the state of Dany's womb throughout the series.
Mm, yeah.
She asserts that it's impossible for her to have pregnant. It's impossible for her to mack a baby.
And John says, "You sure about that?"
And John says, "Well,
who told you that?"
No, and he also, "No harm trying." Does it feel to you like it's very possible that we're going to have an heir to the throne? We're going to have issue from Aegon Targaryen and
yeah,
his
I mean, they made a big deal about Tyrion, you know, questioning like, oh, what are we going to do after you take, like, who's going to succeed you, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
they made a deal about that, and she was like, "Nah, well, we'll discuss that when the war's over, or when I'm on the throne, or whatever." So yeah, the show is kind of dancing around it, and I think it's also interesting to consider Cersei's pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Let's call it a pregnancy for now. I'm not sure I'm totally on board with that, but maybe it is.
Doing the old pregnancy scam.
Yeah, she's certainly not above scamming. So yeah, the show is kind of like maybe setting up these two arcs at the end with children from these two rulers, two potential rulers. Like, I don't know. There's some interesting stuff they could do with that.
Yeah, I... Okay, so I guess we can talk about...
I don't think this series has enough time for Dany to give birth, though, if she were to become pregnant. Like,
but if John's...
maybe in the final episode as sort of, you know, a hey, look at the future of Westeros. Wouldn't that flash forward?
The definition of bittersweet, though, like John dies in the war and leaves behind a pregnant Dany.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know,
there are a lot of definitions
on.
Of bittersweet that, sure. that this show could salvage. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What do you think? I mean, this is the big question everybody wants to know. And these two people are probably the ones that if you're betting and you're wanting to win money in Vegas, or maybe this is the safe money. Wait, maybe wouldn't win much money. But odds are that if there's going to be an Iron Throne at the end of all this, one of these two will sit on it. Do you have money either way?
Yeah, my money's on Dany.
Okay.
And I don't know that it will be an Iron Throne per se, but I think that Dany will end up probably ruling in whatever capacity. Here, I'm going to go with really long odds here.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that both of them live. And I think there's an interesting scenario that's set up by that. Far more interesting than like, oh, one of them dies and we're all sad about it. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow has already pledged himself to Dany, as his queen.
Mm-hmm.
Now that he is actually the rightful heir to the throne, I think that sets up like a really good character moment for Jon, where he kind of fucked them over in last season by refusing to lie to Cersei about like who he's loyal to and to uphold his oath like his father. And I think it's a really nice bookend for this series if he does the same with Dany. He's like, yeah, I'm the rightful heir to this thing, but I've already pledged myself to you. Mm-hmm. So you're actually going to be the queen and I'm going to kind of be... first gentleman. I don't know what the fuck he would be.
The queen consort?
The prince consort, yeah. Prince consort. Whatever it is.
Do you think there's a... Because here's the other thing. Dany still has vast holdings in Essos. And that's really unfinished business. Like,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
do you have fucking Dario sitting on the throne? That's a fucking disaster.
That shit's already... Yeah, it's burned to the ground.
I can't wait till she comes back to Essos, like Donald Glover and Community, and she's got... And it just... everything's in flames, and Dario's got, like, you know... I don't know. I think that what it would be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen. This is too fucking Pollyanna. But it'd be interesting to have like a queen in the west and like a king in the east, or maybe opposite. You have the king in the east, and so they're co-sovereigns. One rules over the former slave empire that Dany overthrown in in Essos, and she reestablishes trade with the other free cities, and you know, shepherds these people helps lead them into a bright new future. And then John stays behind because of his closer connections to Westeros. Maybe again, this seems like way too fucking cute to me, but it neatly resolve the problem of Dany kind of just piecing out on Essos.
It's also resolved if she dies. I mean, it comes to a firm close then.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I think Dany's really going to end up on the throne.
Let's do a deep dive here, because there's been throughout the last two or three seasons really hints that Dany could go either way, that she has the madness of King Aerys and she has, you know, the greatness of like an original Aegon or a Jaehaerys in her as well. She has like both of these qualities in equal measure. And it's kind of like, but pressures and who her advisors are, that's going to kind of like decide whether she turns out to even be a non-tyrant or not. Do you see any possibility of like Dany and Jon having to go to war
against each other?
Yeah. Because I don't think anyone wants to see that.
No, I don't think so,
but it doesn't mean it won't happen. I just think that that's going to be a real bummer for the fans if that's what's happens.
No, I think Dany has good counselors around her. She doesn't have Ilaria whispering in her ear anymore to, you know, be a fucking dragon. Or no, that was the Queen of Thorns, wasn't it?
Oh, Elena.
Yeah.
Do you think... okay, so...
And they both generally want the same thing, which I think is important.
Right. Do you think that it's possible... So I'm trying to think, because, like, you know, one theory that we were talking about is Dany turns evil, Jon has to kill their Jon since the Iron Throne. Mm-hmm. Another possibility that I've seen getting some traction of late is this theory that there's some connection to Jon and the Night King. You know, there's been long pointed out that there's very similar style of dress to Jon and the Night King. Night King wears kind of like what looks like an ancient Night's Watch uniform. There's kind of hints throughout the series. Like Old Nan used to talk about how the Night King could have been a Stark. Is it possible that Jon somehow at the end will be forced to like take the Night, like the Night King represents some kind of elemental force that the children have unleashed, and that Jon will have to take the place, kind of like the way Orlando Bloom took the place of Davy Crockett. Or Davy Crockett, yeah, when he put on the coonskin cap. Davy Jones in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
Okay.
Is there like the Jon will have to be like...
I've seen Lord of the Rings.
Like that'll be like some kind of like... Because there's also a lot of hints that there's like, you know, maybe this is an old pact gone wrong. Or obviously the First Men and the children whose war brought about the White Walkers, if you believe the flashback we saw in earlier seasons of Game of Thrones, that like... obviously the children and First Men eventually made peace, and then a whole bunch of other shit. Like there's some kind of ancient remnants that of some kind of pact that this is the reason the White Walkers are getting rowdy. And
yeah, he's got to bring balance to the Force.
He's got to bring balance to the Force. Kind of exactly. Thing. You got me.
Yeah. I think there's a lot. The interesting thing about that is that there's a lot left for Bran to do, right? I don't think Bran's whole purpose in this entire series has been to tell Jon who he really is. Mm-hmm. I think there's something bigger for him. His power is too great, essentially, to waste on such a almost worthless reveal at this point. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Jon's already fighting on the side of good. Like, the only thing that matters to is who's going to sit on the throne in the end. So I think Bran has a lot more to do, and that seems like a logical path for him to follow, is to kind of be the lore master of this world and tell Jon, look, something's got to give here.
Yeah. Do you think, because he also has that personal connection to the Night King, that they can see each other in their dreams, and the Night King can actually affect Bran physically throughout that? Like,
and he could potentially go back and see the pact that would have been made.
Yeah,
he's the only one who could possibly have, other than maybe Sam, knowledge about this pact, if one exists.
Is there anything else we want to talk about? So, the third theory, or I guess, I don't know what theory we're on to, on the Seventh Hand... there's something that I've been championing since like season three, which is there is not going to be an Iron Throne.
Yeah, break the wheel.
Break the wheel. And I feel like this used to not be a popular theory until last year, when there's lots of explicit things like Tyrion says, you know, doesn't have to always be kings and queens. There's the Night Watch, who picks their leaders democratically, and the Ironborn, who picks their crew. Like, and there's all these other instances. In fact, I wrote at great length in my book that you can purchase now at godsofthrones.com, Stealth Ad Number 1, where I make it the case for the fact that you're not going to...
Implying a second stealth ad later. Look for that.
Oh, they'll be... yeah. You know, don't take a drink every time they happen. You might lose consciousness. I think that there... I really think that I would be shocked at this point if there is a conventional Iron Throne with no... I'm not saying it's going to be like a one-person, one-vote type true... like the democracy, but like some kind of nod to that, where there is some sort of selection of a person who's the executive. There's some sort of a House of Lords that's not appointed but select. I think there's going to be some kind of thing like that. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's, I think that's what's going to happen, because that's the only way you break the wheel.
Yeah, maybe it's up to the people to choose between Jon and Dany in the end.
It's a popularity contest. That'll split a couple up.
I mean, that's essentially how Jon became King of the North, right? Popularity.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he did a good job. People really loved him, and they elected him King of the North. He didn't really even campaign for
it. Which is funny, because like that's kind of the theme of Game of Thrones, like going back to Varys' riddle about, you know, who has the power, the sellsword, the king, the priest, it's always the people, right? Because if you have a millions of people versus thousands of knights, like, I've seen zombie movies. That shit, the might is in the horde's hands, essentially.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, it's always true that the people, like, you know, they might not have a say in it, but, like, it's kind of rule by consent, because if things get too Sheriff of Nottingham too long, they rise up, you know? And then they make life untenable to those. Like, just look at what happened in earlier seasons of Game of Thrones, where the king starts being threatened. They, you know, it got scary for the Lannisters there for a while before it got really, really scary for them. I think that it's, like, to me, that's the obvious end game. The question is just, you know, who's going to be the prime minister? Who's going to be left alive? Who's going to be, you know, is that, like, on Danny's dying wish is to have Westeros be some sort of meritocracy, democracy? I that's where I think it's going.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we want to talk about before we get to the next set of peoples?
No, let's bring them on.
Tyrion, Varys, and Jorah. These are kind of like Danny's closest advisors.
Tyrion got duped at the end of last season.
He did. Yeah. Kinda. Are you a subscriber to the idea that Tyrion is a turncloak and that he has made some secret pact with Cersei?
No.
That would be
I think he just got duped. I think Cersei's just gotten much better at this game. Mm-hmm. Tyrion hasn't had to play it as of late.
Right.
Ever since he was on the road to Meereen, essentially.
Yeah.
He's been out of the game, and I think Cersei's gotten a lot better at it than he has.
Yeah, and I think he's also kind of filled with self-doubt, because a lot of the advice he gave to Dany, I think, is good long-term advice, but short-term, there was problems, and they butted heads on, like, you know, whether you should burn people alive or not.
And I think he's, like, he's let his judgment, I think, at times be clouded by the fact that this is family, but I don't think he's in on some secret, you know, pact against Dany.
So what's the explanation for Tyrion's pensive look at the boat sex that we've talked about at length?
That's a good question. I didn't do much thinking about it before this podcast, but I mean, isn't it a little worrying when the two leaders start banging?
I mean, the last time a Targaryen eloped with a Stark, it plunged the realm into bloody civil war.
That's fair.
Tyrion's a student of history.
No, that's fair.
So I think, and, you know, he's a king of his own right, and she's a queen by, I guess, right of conquest. Like, instead of, like, having you got a unified army now versus the dead, but what happens when you have to fight against Cersei? What happens after Cersei's overthrown? Do you start fighting amongst yourself? Like,
yeah.
I never bought the idea that Tyrion is jealous of Dany in a literal sense. Like, oh, I wish it was me rather than Jon. I think it's more of, like, I'm her prime minister, I'm her chief counselor. I don't know how I feel about this. This is someone getting closer to her than I'll ever be able to get. And I'm supposed to, like, Varys is wanting me to, like, tame this dragon. And now I got this wolf in here doing the opposite of that. Like, I think it's all, I think it's concern for the realm more than concern for his own libido.
Yeah, I agree.
Cause I just don't think, I think that Tyrion's Tyrion's romantic storylines kind of ended with Shay. Okay, let's talk about Varys, which I think
is interesting. Yeah, he's supposedly going to be keeping Dany in check, right? I mean, he doesn't seem to be doing a lot in the moment, more than just sort of monitoring Dany's actions and, you know, sort of giving her
how worried he is about it.
Dany, you're getting a little too mad kingy here for me.
Uh-huh.
But that hasn't been a scenario that he's had to deal with yet. Which, you know, why bring it up if it's not going to come up later? So maybe there's going to be, you know, one more bout of Dany sort of like pushing toward Mad King status. I mean, she does have a couple of really hard battles coming up that might test her will. And I think Varys is going to have to be there by her side coaching her.
Yeah, no, I think Varys is something that I think that Dany has suffered from is bad intelligence. Up to this point, like, I really would like to see Varys come through in a big way as the master of whispers and spiders to kind of save the day with a piece of choice intelligence. What do you make of, like, so Melisandre said last season they had kind of a frosty goodbye. She was going to go across the Volantis. We'll be talking about her in a minute. And Tyrion and Varys is like, good, get on before you get spit on. And she says, oh, I'll be back. I'm destined to die. I forget exactly how she said, but I'm destined to die in this foreign land, as are you. Mm-hmm. If we take her at her word, now, of course, has Melisandre made an actual accurate prediction thus far?
It's hard to say.
Right. I just feel like that...
There's always sort of like ad hoc predictions and filling in the blanks and saying, hey, you see that thing that just happened?
Yeah.
I kind of predicted, sort of, if you look at it the right way, that would happen.
Yeah, I mean, she's like full of these regrets and all the mistakes she's made and all the will that she's of R'hllor that she's misinterpreted. I don't know if we can take that, but like if you do take it at face value, Bear's going to die next season.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be appropriate. You know, because his whole shtick has been, I care not for myself or for others. It's all for the realm. It'd be an interesting note for him to like have to put up and shut up and actually make a real sacrifice like that. Not that he hasn't made sacrifices all throughout his life. Most notably to some dark god with his balls and dick. I don't know. I Varys is one of my absolute favorite characters, and if he does go out, I hope he goes out. I hope they give him a very fitting way to go out.
Go out with a quip.
Because he would be like him and Tyrion, more so than Dany and Jon. Like once Dany and Jon fight the war and win the war, like the king and queen isn't as necessary. Like I think Tyrion and Varys are like the backbone of a new type of politics that could sweep over Westeros and rebuild and restore things. You need mm-hmm. like a firm, steady hand on the wheel, and both of them would be good. So, but there again, bittersweet. I don't think both of them can survive. I feel we're ready to broker format. What are the odds? So like if we had to put odds on these characters surviving, and we haven't really talked about Jorah because I don't know what to do with Jorah. I don't know what the show knows what to do with Jorah. Jorah seems like he's destined to die in some kind of showy thing, but he already kind of did that with the grayscale. Mm-hmm. You know, he was sent on a suicide mission and he prevailed. I guess narratively it'd be a nice bookend for him to go on a suicide mission and fail.
Yeah, I kind of don't care about Jorah. Like, he doesn't just a role anymore.
He's just a tragic figure at this point.
Yeah, he's not going to be banging Dany. She's banging
Jon. That's what he wants.
Yeah, he's not going to have, like, her ear as much as Tyrion or Varys or Jon. Like, I don't know what his role is in the climax of this show.
I don't...
It seems only as a soldier in Winterfell.
So...
You know, essentially a hero character can die.
Do you think the Night's, because this is going to come up later in the podcast, do you think the Night's Watch has a role at the end of the series? Because if so, Jorah would make a damn fine Lord Commander.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it just depends on which way this battle goes, right?
And yeah.
Whether there's a pact of hold or not.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, following in the footsteps of Gior, I think could be kind of cool for him mm-hmm. if there's a Night's Watch to do that in.
Or if the wall's down and the north is just now like twice as big and more hospitable, like do you need a lord paramount of the north, like,
yeah.
Like you don't have a lord commander anymore of a Night's Watch, but you have someone that's kind of like overseeing, like helping out the wildlings and settling into the gift. And you know, also if the White Walkers are gone, maybe the Land of Always Winter thaws a little bit and it's a little nicer up there. Like I could see something like that happen.
Maybe he could go coach Lady okay. Lady Mormont through her teen years.
I'm going to circle back. John and Dany, death percentage. Well, how certain are you? Dany, percentage of certainty that she's going to die.
Percentage of certainty?
Yes.
Oh, God, I'm completely uncertain on all this.
Gun to your... The Valyrian steel to your
gonna
throat.
She's going
to
die?
She lives or dies? What's your percentage that she's going to die?
I think it's almost 100 that she lives.
100% that she lives.
Yeah, that's where my head's at right now.
All right, Jon Snow, same thing.
Oh, he's like
Aegon Targaryen.
He's like an 80%.
80% dead?
No, alive.
Oh, alive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I really want this, like, you know, his and hers rulers kind of thing.
I think it's 100% chance that one of them is going to die, but
sure,
I don't know which one. So I guess they're both odds are 50-50 and the cumulative is 100%. I just think that one of them, I'm sure there's a place I could bet money. I don't really have a lot of money right now, but if I could bet money, I would bet absolutely on some kind of proposition that one or the other doesn't make it through. I think that's as close to a lock. Like without that, you don't really have bittersweet. Like, there's a huge swath of fan base that if John and Danny can live happily ever after, like, that's as sweet as you can get. So I think
John is much more likely to die, simply because there's not as much of a place for him in this world anymore. Like, with Sansa kind of stepping in as Lady of Winterfell, I think that's where she belongs and where she'll probably end up at the end of this series. So, like, where does John go? What does John do after this war? And if he's not going to be ruling in Winterfell like his father or faux father, I just don't see as much of a place for him as there is for Dany and Sansa.
Gotcha. Tyrion, Varys, Jorah, percentage of death certainty.
Jorah almost 100%. Jorah's done. Dead.
I'm at 0% because I talked myself into him
being
the Lord Paramount of the North North or Lord Commander of the North Watch, whatever it is. Tyrion.
I think there's no role for him. He's dead. Tyrion. Fuck, I don't want to think about Tyrion dying. Don't make me do this.
Well, say 0% and get it over with, coward.
All right, then 0%. Tyrion's going to live only because I love him.
I'm actually 0% too.
Why? Do you have like a rationale for it other than I just love that character?
There doesn't seem any narrative purpose for him to die at this point. He is probably, of all the non-regal characters, the linchpin of what would be a future form of Westeros government. Like, some of these people have to live. He's a fan favorite. Why would he be on a battlefield?
I wish that Lady Olenna had a counterpart. That she could quip with and just have discussions with and had somebody who really was truly her equal. And I can picture like a Golden Girls style thing where Tyrion and Varys are sitting there at the ripe old age of 65, just drinking wine and taking jabs
ancient
at each other.
Medieval standards, yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. I would love to see that be their future. So I'm going to say that none of them die and they end up like the Golden Girls.
I think 100% chance for Varys to die because I think this is going to be the time where Melisandre is correct. If nothing else, she'll kill Varys just so she can say what, and then herself, an elaborate murder suicide just so she can say I was right as she's slitting her own throat. She'll say I was right. I was
finally,
right this one
right.
time. R'hllor be praised as she throws herself onto a fiery pit. Okay, so you're at Tyrion 0%. We agree. You're at Varys 0%.
Oh yeah,
boy, you got no.
Nobody's gonna die.
You got
Jorah's the only one dead so far.
Jorah's 100%. You're fostering all your percentages onto the characters you don't care about. I'm noticing here.
Exactly.
Okay. How about
I'm a fan. What do you want?
How about Melisandre and Sandor Clegane? Melisandre, the lady in red who associated fire, and the man who was both touched by it and repulsed by it. Got a problem with fire, Sandor Clegane.
So we talked about where Mel's at this point, right? She's
she's off doing something, but gonna come back. Licking her wounds over in Volantis.
Yeah, she's gonna probably come back and slit Varys' throat.
Do you think there's gonna be, because, you know, do you think she's gonna bring like a elite commando unit of red priests and priestesses, and there's gonna be like some crazy CGI sequence where they're all just running over to battlefield, birthing shadow babies, setting people on fire.
Man, we got enough fire with the dragons in the battles.
You gotta have more. You gotta have, you know, gotta have more fire. You got people on the fire bandwagon.
I think it would be fitting if she died in a fiery blaze.
Yeah,
I don't know if she can, but
true.
We'll see.
What else does she go? Well, I don't understand. Like Volantis is like that's the nexus of Lord of the Light worship. I don't. No.
Yeah, and Danny was appreciative of the red priest.
Yeah. We've met some of these. Like, I think one of them was Kinara or whatever. We've met some of these red priests and priestesses. So like, it would be kind of neat, but like, it also would feel kind of like it kind of feel like a bullet point of Martin's that they're fulfilling because I don't feel like they've adequately laid the tracks for something that awesome. But on the other hand,
John's a lot more skeptical of the red priest, priestess.
Oh yeah, no, I think him and Davos are very much kill on sight.
Yeah, so she comes back and like Danny's all, oh, the red priests helped me when I needed help, and they were definitely on my side. And John's like, no, they're bad people. Don't trust them. There could be an interesting argument to be had there.
Yeah,
throw a little tension in that relationship.
So Sandor, after seasons of hype dying, essentially came to King's Landing to sell fucking tickets to the Clegane Bowl last season.
Yeah, he sold at least one.
Yeah, and like, it looked right in the camera and be like, I know you, we've got unfinished business.
And we're not going to finish it right now
because
the story demands it. I'm going north again.
HBO wants to save this shit for the final season. It's going to be one hour and 29 minutes of you and me going toe-to-toe, brother. It's going to be like that joust fight we had, except for last an hour and a half.
That might be either awful or amazing. I don't know which.
90 minutes is just 2 minutes. Like you thought Revenge of the Sith, the third act, drug on long. Wait until you see.
I thought the hallway fight in Daredevil was harrowing. 90 minutes in full plate armor.
Yeah.
Against an undead beast.
Yeah. But that's happening, and it's going to be fucking awesome. And like I can't tell you how happy it makes me as one of these kind of a crazy theory fanboys to have seen the community like kind of go through the five stages of grief about this, and then have it like it's like literally something returned from the dead, completely unexpected. I'm pretty excited about that.
Let me go way out there on a crazy theory because. Okay, I don't know where to draw the line on spoilers. Like, we know that Miguel Sapochnik directs 2 episodes this season.
Uh-huh.
Is it spoilery to talk about that?
I don't think
And what that might
so.
Mean for the fate of some of these characters in the show?
Oh, I think... I don't know. I don't know, and I guess I would lean on the side of being overly cautious because people...
Okay, let me say this. In the trailer, there is a crazy battle depicted, right? Between the Night King and the Battle of Winterfell.
Yeah. Seemingly,
It's just that one battle. I think in the trailer there might actually be 2 battles.
That was my take, you asshole.
Okay, then join me on this
yes,
trip.
Yes, all right. You have my microphone.
Because everybody that they show in the sort of really fiery portions of that battle
yes.
has many reasons to be in King's Landing.
Yes.
And I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be a Battle of Winterfell,
mm-hmm.
and then... We've dealt with the Night King,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some people, you know, they say, oh, that'll never happen in episode 3 because it's anticlimactic.
Bullshit.
Because there's a bigger climax
exactly.
for all the characters, and that is the dealing with Cersei
yeah.
and finally settling this Iron Throne thing.
Yeah.
That's the big important thing, and I think a lot of these characters could end up in King's Landing with fiery dragon attacks.
I think you're right. Because
So we see the Hound down there, and mm-hmm. if you're going to say, well, he's got to do the Clegane Bowl, I don't know how you could ever get the mountain going north.
Right.
Because he's there as Cersei's personal bodyguard. She's mm-hmm. not going to fucking go north.
No.
So the Hound has to come to him, and we see Arya in that battle. We see Jaime in that battle. I think those 3 people at least are going south.
It's interesting because... this is something that kind of got, because I was watching some Alt-Shift-X videos this week, and I was going through, you know, just had him kind of playing in the background, and he mentioned this thing that I haven't heard before, where, I mean, that, okay, so Martin has said a lot of times that, like, all these different resurrections are combined, like, or have something related to each other. Like, you've got, like, essentially ice whites and fire whites. Like, you know, what the Night King makes are ice whites. What, like, Jon Snow might be a fire white. He's literally a corpse that's returned to life. And the idea that like Sandor's deathly afraid of fire and his brother's the one that gave him that fear. If Qyburn resurrected the mountain as more of like an ice type zombie, then we'd know that he is roughly as flammable as kerosene soaked cardboard.
Uh-huh.
So it could be that, and it would be a very narratively satisfying end for Sandor to use the element that his brother used to kind of break him, to destroy him, and finally get free of this fiery monkey he's had on his back.
Mm-hmm.
I like that take. I think that's got a lot of merit to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you about the trailer actually stealthily showing 2 different battles. And then we talked about Melisandre. I think we're done with her.
Do you have any predictions on Sandor's like final fate? Do you think he's gonna live? And what does he do if he does?
Does he
go back to the monkery, wherever the hell he was? Does he go build a fucking church in the middle of nowhere?
Sandor getting peace would be a satisfying conclusion as arc, and that could be death. But there's also a school of thought that anyone who's died, like Diamond resurrected, probably won't be killed again. And Sandor, of course, was at least literally killed. Narratively killed and then brought back to life. So I don't know if I subscribe to that theory. I don't know. Like, to me, the Hound feels like a character who could die. Like, he could even die as he's bringing the mountain down, and that he would be satisfied because he has, kind of fulfilled his, like, I don't know. His life is such a fucking nightmare, mm-hmm. By his perspective, and it has been for a very long time, that, like, just getting out might be. But on the other hand, it'd be really cool to see him and, like, Beric pal around up north, too. So what do you think? What's your let's I'm gonna put the screws to you. Your death percentages, Melisandre and Sandor.
I think Melisandre has got to go.
100%. She's with Varys. I think that's gonna be, it's a murder suicide just to prove herself right. She's gonna leech herself and throw herself on the barbecue.
But her shadow baby will live on.
Her shadow baby will live on. I heard the shadow baby actually settled down in Dorne and is doing just fine. Has a little vineyard.
Yeah.
Wears a wide brim hat to keep itself out of the sun, but, you know, it has to. It's a shadow.
Yeah, it would just cease to exist if the sun
got it. Right, right. Got married, has a couple of shadow kids with his beautiful shadow wife.
All right, I don't know. The Sandor, just completely waffling to say I'm 50-50 on Sandor.
Yes, but that's something you're allowed to do.
Okay, then I'm going to open up a Waffle House and say Sandor.
Okay.
It could either live or die, and I think both would be weirdly satisfying.
I think I'm 25% him dying, but 75% him living and him being kind of like the living embodied and bittersweet, because like I can see him having a conversation with Beric's probably gonna die, but having a conversation with somebody like Jaime or some other warrior, and he's like, now what do I do? Like, I've lived my whole life to get revenge on my brother and to, you know, reclaim this thing about myself, and then it's like, you know, claps him on the head, like, that's for you to find out, you've got, like, you know, some kind of shit like that.
He should go to the farm of that dude he killed and just take it over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just live out his days, try and do justice to the farm.
The farmer will haunt him. Him and his daughter will haunt him.
That's the price you pay for being a bastard.
Yeah. So what else we have? Oh, we're going to move on to another triplet. Sansa and Arya and Bran. They are chilling at Winterfell after having killed, in a joint project, their powers combined, killing Littlefinger. Which, as we mentioned, don't think they handled that plot as deftly as they wanted to, but like the way it ended, I can't super complain about, unless you want Littlefinger to have a super Bond villain dramatic exit, which, okay, fine. I'm kind of with you on that. I'm going to pretend that's what happened. I'm going to pretend like he actually made a cogent defense for himself and Sansa just thought him, because that's kind of been her part. They didn't tell that story, but where we're at's fine. Where we're at's fine, and where we're at is there in Winterfell. Hanging out.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
All right. So I think the natural place for Sansa to be is right where she is now, ruling Winterfell.
Okay.
Essentially ruling the North as her father did.
Lady of Winterfell.
Yes.
Arya.
Arya has got to at least try to kill Cersei.
Okay.
Like 100% she's got to go south to King's Landing and try to kill Cersei. Now, the only argument I would see against that is that she is now a faceless man, mm-hmm. which might preclude her from, you know, carrying out the promises of this list.
A girl is no one. So
But she's also kind of not someone. Yeah. Like, she comes back and recognizes Sansa and
she's really
has
fucking
a sisterly relationship.
Yeah.
So fuck it. She's going to try and kill Cersei in King's Landing for sure.
If Jaime ends up dying, we haven't got to Jaime yet. That'll be next. It's possible she wears Jaime's face.
She can wear Jamie's face, yeah.
Could have all kinds of interesting ramifications.
Uh-huh.
So the other thing that I think would be cool is, like, she wanted to be, like, a knight. It'd be kind of cool for her to be on the King's Guard or the Queen's Guard.
I was going to say, could she take the mountain's face? Could she become the mountain?
That would be interesting, because I honestly don't know what the limits of her shape-shifting ability are. I mean, she can...
Right. She can turn into Walder Frey, 100%, period.
Yes.
So she could probably turn physically into the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe... Because like, it's always been a kind of open question in books, like how much of the Faceless Men is like actual blood magic and how much of it is like theatrics and deception and kind of Batman League of Shadows shit.
And can she take a face after the body is dead? I mean, A, the mountain's already dead, and B, Sandor is probably going to kill the mountain. So
But
can she get a face after?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then what are limits? Because you could maybe, so I'm like 6'2", and you're like, 5'9". You could, I believe you could inhabit me with like a certain amount of theatrical skill.
I could wear your skin, certainly.
I don't think you could do that Shaquille O'Neal.
It'd be a little baggy.
Without magic. Without magic involved, I don't think you can do that Shaquille O'Neal. So I guess we'll find out
I think there's certainly magic involved, though.
What do you think of my idea about her being on the Queen/Kingsguard?
Because
she don't care about lands or titles.
After
dudes.
Things
like,
all, yeah.
Boy, come on.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe she could just go be with her direwolf in the woods.
Mm.
Maybe she can just return to nature and just go feral.
Yeah, just be just let your hair grow out, be naked.
I mean, that's the true way to be no one, right?
Hell yeah.
Is to become a dog.
A girl is a wolf.
Yeah.
I like it. Actually, I kind of like that. Not going to happen in a million years, but there you go, George. There's your idea to save the franchise. Have Arya be a wolf. Bran. Okay. Bran is almost... What place does a super, like a god like Bran have
in
future of Westeros?
In a cave under a tree. Like, that's... The kind of the three-eyed raven was right where he needed to be, sort of out of the way.
Yeah.
Just watching and plotting ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, if Bran can return to some kind of role like that, I'm cool. Maybe he ends up under the Weirwood in Winterfell, right?
I think he somehow merges. Like, that would be very cool, I think. So he's still there to maybe consult in a kind of Obi-Wan ghost kind of way, like if Sansa needs some wisdom or, you know, or Daenerys or Jon want to bend the knee before the tree and beseech the wisdom of the old gods. Like, he's there. But, like, I don't see him living corporeally. I also kind of see him just being, like, maybe obliterated in some kind of psychic battle with the Night King. That allows the Night King to be weakened enough for like Jon to get in there with his Valyrian steel blade.
Yeah, distraction.
Yeah.
Distraction, Bran.
Right, he turns his brain to yogurt just to give Jon that 5 seconds of...
I mean, it's possible.
He needs five... I need 5 seconds of white eye time with the Night King, Bran.
I mean, he did it to Hodor.
Yeah.
He could definitely do it to himself.
Yeah. I think so. There's what I think we're in agreement about Bran. So let's do some death percentages. Sansa,
0%.
0%. If Sansa fucking dies after all the shit she's been through,
I know,
on the cusp of gaining like safety and security and like learning how to rule, I'm gonna be fucking living.
Wouldn't that be the definition
That's
of bittersweet?
Just bitter. Nah, it's just fucking bitter. It's 99% cacao. I don't like it. Arya. I can feel a 50% coming off
No, I don't think Arya
like
dies.
Like Army of the Dead.
Who's gonna fucking kill Arya?
Gates.
Nobody can kill Arya.
The Night King can kill Arya.
No,
undead fucking dragon
but
can
she,
kill Arya.
But in my opinion, she goes to King's Landing, and King's Landing will not be a thing until after the Night King is dealt with. So
as soon as she crosses the last name off her list, then Jack and Hagar cloaks off her starboard bow and kills her and says, a girl will be no one. And then he winks at the camera and
a girl has been someone for too long. Slice.
Yeah.
I don't think she's gonna die. I think she's gonna go kill Cersei.
I think the Stark kid. I think Bran is going to be the representative misery. Bran and Rickon, and Rob are going to be the representative misery of the Stark children. And Bran, again, don't think he's going to be like the boy, but I think he is going to. I don't think he's going to be a living person anymore. But I do think he's going to like live on, like you said, in a tree.
Yeah.
Okay, we're 0% chance of death on all three of these characters, essentially.
In that Bran is going to, in some form, live.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like a cutting off death. All right, we have kind of a love triangle plus extra plus one. Love triangle plus one.
Okay, and I believe that's called a foursome.
And Jaime, Brienne, Tormund, and Bronn.
Oh, Bronn gets thrown in here. Okay.
So we know, we already talked about Jaime. He was last seen looking very, very dapper in a black kind of Night's Watch cloak, leaving King's Landing as snow was descending. Brienne and Tormund are actually north. Brienne is in Winterfell. I think Tormund is there, or if he saw destruction, he's going to be on his way.
Yeah.
Because we did find in a trailer he survived.
Yes.
And then Bronn was last seen in the capital, but openly talking about changing his allegiances and having no desire to fight dragons. But they didn't show Bronn with Jaime, so what would that look like?
So let me go back real quick to Tormund, because I think he's going to end up probably at Castle Black, if I had to guess.
Okay.
I mean, he's already up at the wall last we saw him.
Do you think the whole wall fell down or did that one section?
I think just that section came down.
Okay.
And I think Castle Black is still standing. And we see in the trailer him with Beric and somebody who looks like... Sam's friend from...
Oh, Dolores Ed?
Yes, Dolores Ed. Who we know is currently up at Castle Black, right? So I think he could end up going there before he makes any kind of journey to Winterfell. And I don't know if he may meet his end there, because it's weird to me that, like, the Night King, the forces of the dead have already breached the wall.
Mm-hmm.
What purpose would they have to go to Castle Black?
I don't understand. Yeah.
There'd be no reason for it. So I think he's almost, like, super safe up in Castle Black.
But is this something that you saw in the trailers or something? Like, why would Tormund go to Castle Black? Like, it seems like the move...
Yeah, I saw in the trailer that him and Beric and Dolores were all in a scene together.
Could be like, because like that's they. I think they were supposed to understand they're Eastwatch by the Sea, which is another game. Uh-huh. Like, how could you tell that versus Castle Black just by looking at it?
No, but either way, I mean, they're up at the wall, and the wall is down.
Yeah.
The Night's King has no reason to attack
any
of the castles on the wall anymore.
No. I think he's going to make a beeline to where all the living are gathered in defiance of him, which is Winterfell. I don't know if that's a feedback.
Or potentially wherever the fuck Bran is. Like, that might be his biggest concern.
Right, that might be what's attracting him.
Yeah.
We talked about Tormund. Let's back up here. Jaime, Brienne, Tormund, and Bronn.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of shipping? Do you care to ship any combination of these characters? Because I'm a very big Jaime, Brienne guy.
Yeah, if I'm going to ship anybody, it's them.
Have been since I've read the third book. My co-author, Anthony, on Gods of Thrones, godsofthrones.com, is a big Brienne Tormund shipper.
Oh, why?
It's funny.
Why? It's funny.
It's super
but...
funny.
Yeah, but I don't want Brienne to end up with the funny choice.
No.
I want her to end up with the noble, heroic choice. The man who's tried to do good all his life, been shit on, and understands, like, some of her plight, too. Like,
I mean, I think
I
think Tormund would be an all right guy if he could tone down the, you know, slick as a wet baby seal talking. But
there's just nothing interesting to Tormund other than... his quips and his jokes, like
his physical size,
his size. But like,
it's got to be nice for a woman like Brienne to have
I don't know. That's saying you can only pair Brienne off with a freak of nature. Like, that's weird. Like, why not give her the romantic relationship with the extremely conventionally attractive man?
I mean, that's fine with me. I find Gwendolyn Christie extremely conventionally attractive. So
I know that's what I'm saying. Like, they've played her character as like this. This weird freak that nobody wants.
And
right?
I do think that she
to
is...
To put her with a weird freak at the end is kind of saying, like, yeah, she was a weird freak all along.
Tormund will remember that.
Tormund should remember that.
I don't know. Like, because, like, to me, if Brienne and Jaime actually get together, and how would that even fucking look like? Like, I mean, what is this going to be? Like, some kind of asinine Princess Bride ending where everyone's getting married and there's, like, it's like Lord of the Rings, except every time you fade to black, it's a new fucking marriage going on. Like,
they're all different colors and everybody's killed and...
Yeah.
That's the end of the
Like, I don't know what I'm expecting. Like, a hug after a the final battle. I don't know what I'm expecting when I say Brienne and Jaime ship other than...
The blonde wedding.
I don't want
wedding.
Them... It's a blonde wedding.
There you go.
I don't want them to be enemies anymore. I want them to. But the thing that is killing me here is I don't think both of them are going to survive. Like, I really, you know, we've talked about Jaime having to pay because, you know, like, yeah, we like him and he's redeemed himself. He's done a lot of heinous shit in his day. One way he could pay for that is taking the black. And you know, he certainly seems dressed for the occasion, but if he doesn't get that, and even if he does, then that kind of precludes a relationship with Brienne, although I could almost see them as a couple working, like she takes the black too, and they just kind of like an asexual but supportive, you know, mutual admiration society up there.
Okay.
So I don't know, because like the only person I've seen Brienne carry a torch for was a gay man, and that's tragic.
Mm, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Jaime's probably going to die. Then maybe Tormund doesn't look so bad.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if he's the only offer on the table.
All right. Let's talk about Bronn.
I think
though.
I'm okay with it.
Let's talk about Bronn.
So Bronn is on the side of, well, Bronn is looking out for himself.
Yeah.
And that's what Bronn does best. However, he's gotten himself, that has gotten him mixed up with the likes of Cersei.
I could see, like, have you ever seen Braveheart? The
yes.
scene where the crazy Irishman like somehow pulls the entire Irish contingent of the king's army to the Scottish side at the last minute, and it's kind of like a turning point. Like, I could almost see him like leading an entire division of Cersei's troops away from their defense, and joining the and that's how
the Gold Company, he sabotages that whole thing.
Oh my
taking
god!
Them away.
If he steals the entire Gold Company.
I mean, they're a lot alike,
right?
That's
canon. That's happening.
They're just looking for gold.
Right.
Just like Bronn.
Just like Bronn.
There you go.
Bronn goes way back with the commander of the Gold Company. Golden Company, turns out.
He might,
out.
Actually.
Yeah. So I see something like that, where, like, I don't, because, you know, like, the other alternative is he's following Jaime up to Winterfell like fucking Gollum followed Frodo and Sam. Like, I don't see him being that.
I mean, a super satisfying arc for a character like Bronn is to have him finally give a shit. I mean, it's Han Solo, right?
Like, I almost think that, like, I could see him just, like, if I never see Bronn again, I just assume he went off and fucked off to Stokesworth Castle and gonna ride this thing out. I got my reasonably sized castle. I've got my fancy clothes. I've got my, you know, wife who's going to give me some lord fancy lads and ladies. And we could check with him. There's going to be a post-credit scene where he's just sitting in a chair, bored out of his gourd, and that's whatever seat the Stokesworth needs to have.
Do you think there might be a showdown between either him and Jaime, or him and Tyrion, even?
Yes, but
like
that
one of
will
his
not
close
feel
friends.
Satisfying. Because, like, there's nothing. I mean,
no,
Bronn's
I mean, if it's bittersweet, like having Bronn be true to Cersei because she's paying the bills to the very end over
that's
the
true.
Friendships that he has with these
he's
other people.
He's a chaotic neutral. I could totally see that happening.
Yeah, I think that's pretty bittersweet.
But I don't think he's going to
go.
Whether
he dies,
like,
or kills them.
But I mean, he's going to see dragons on the other side, and like the epitome of a sellsword is like, well, I got to be alive to sell my sword, so.
But he's seen dragons. I mean, he's fought dragons.
Yeah, he said the last we heard, he's like, I don't want any part of that. Like, it's scary. Those things,
yeah, I guess we don't really know where he's at.
I don't think he's going. I would feel like it's almost like a bit, like he's, like, taken up political sides if he fights for Cersei at this point. It would kind of, like, feel like a borderline betrayal of his character. But I don't know. We'll see.
Tyrion offered to double Cersei's offer, so maybe he can take it.
Okay, so let's do percentages here. Jaime, live or dead percentage, death percentage.
I'm going to give him a 20% chance to live.
I'm at a hundo.
To die?
To die.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't like that. See, I like Jaime, but I think that's what my
I think there's an argument to be
saying.
Made that Jaime has already given enough to make up for his deeds, his evil deeds in the past.
Well, but he's also...
He's sacrificed everything that a man can.
But here, okay. There's one way that I've seen discussed. There's one way that he could potentially redeem, because it's not just like he's done enough. He's done enough that we've seen, but like his popular perception among the realm is still radioactive.
Yeah, he's
like,
still the Kingslayer. Because
he's the Kingslayer. What if he is the one that kills the Night's King?
With a little dragon glass arrowhead.
And then he's the Kingslayer. You're goddamn right. You're goddamn right on the Kingslayer.
Kingslayer takes an entirely new
meaning.
I like
it. I've saved
this
fucking realm from two evil kings, you ungrateful bastards.
But somehow the Night King has actually earned a really good reputation at that point in Westeros.
Yeah.
And so he looks like an
asshole. Yeah, the Night King sweeps all these idiots off the board, and he's got sensible taxation policies, and trade's never been more booming with Essos.
But Jaime's just got to live up to his name.
He's protecting women and minorities, and it's like, God, man, we should have torn down this wall a long time ago.
So do you think that keeps him alive and makes up for everything? Like, he wouldn't have to die at that point?
I think actually he's going to die. I really like the idea of the Kingslayer being redeemed by slaying a new king, but I think he probably pays the ultimate price in that. So you're at 20%, I'm at 100%, but we both kind of feel that Jamie somehow be redeemed, right?
I'm at 80% to die. I was at 20% to live.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's...
So that just represents you feeling that he's kind of like...
There's a possibility that he can redeem himself or has redeemed himself already, but I'm kind of with you, I think.
I think most fans could put up a good faith argument that Jamie's done enough. And certainly my meal bag was full of them after we signed off last year.
No, I like Jamie a lot now.
I do too. And I can totally understand the person he is and how he made the decisions and how disillusioned he got and how that can turn you into a shit and fatalist and nihilist. And like, yeah, I get all that. Brian. I'm gonna jump in because I haven't done this yet. 0% chance for her to die.
I agree.
She's a mortal lock
to live. And I think like
an immortal lock.
Essentially, her promise to Kat, I think, is sort of keeping her alive in my mind.
Okay.
Like it would be super fitting if she just ended up by Sansa's side.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially serving as her mountain, you know,
right.
Her Kingsguard, Queensguard.
Mm-hmm.
Lady of Winterfell's guard.
Tormund.
Tormund needs to die. Die, Tormund.
Can I get my percentage of Tormund dying as a shrug?
Okay.
Like, I think Tormund's fine, but I've never connected with him like I've connected. Like, he's always been kind of a goofy guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's
and
there.
I still don't like him for killing that farmer back in season 3. I mean, that's horse shit, Tormund. That guy didn't need to die.
What about the Hound? Don't harbor the same ill will toward the Hound.
I mean,
for killing the farmer in season.
What did
4?
I say? What did I say? I don't even remember my own percentage for Sandor dying. But yeah, I don't care. I don't care about Tormund.
Yeah, I really couldn't care less about Tormund as a character, and I'll actually almost be angry if he ends up with Brienne.
Yeah,
because I don't think he's worthy.
Sorry, Anthony, but kinda, yeah.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. What about Braun?
I think Braun's got to die.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I think Braun's like the cockroach with the heart of gold.
Yeah?
Yeah. He'll survive any winter nuclear.
I mean, you're not wrong. He survived Night King a lot. Based.
Yeah.
I mean, just surviving like Blackwater alone is enough for me to go, that was impressive.
Yeah. And one of the few characters throughout the series that has continued to improve his situation as everything else deteriorates around him.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else is losing bits of themselves. He just keeps getting.
He was in Blackwater, right? For my
yeah, hell yeah.
Misremembering. Okay.
Yeah, he was in like old G season, like defended Tyrion's duel to the death in season one.
Yeah.
Okay, so you say 100% chance, and I'm saying 0% chance?
Yeah.
Okay. Sam and Gilly.
I feel like, okay, so first of all, Sam has just revealed to Bran like there was an actual marriage between Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jon is actually not just a Targaryen bastard, he's also like the trueborn king.
Yeah.
Gilly seems to simply be taking care of a baby at this point.
Uh-huh.
That's her role and learning to read.
Right.
So like here's what I think needs to happen with Sam based on his character.
Okay.
And his arc thus far. He's always been the protector of Gilly, right? Like,
sure.
From the moment he met her, he has been slaying White Walkers.
He's been her champion.
In her name. He's been fending off assholes who would see her harm in Castle Black. Like, he's always done it, but he's always kind of accidentally done it. He's never actually, like, really stepped up and defended her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's always been willing to do it if it came to that and to die for it, but he's never had to really go through that because Ghost saved him in Castle Black. This magic fucking piece of glass that he has saved him up in the north, sure. Beyond the wall. So, like, I feel like Sam's arc is going to be one of actually having to make that sacrifice to protect Gilly at this point.
Right.
And to protect his baby, whose name is Sam?
Baby Sam, yep, baby
yeah,
Sam.
Yeah, okay. I feel like he's going to have to die in service of his belief that he needs to protect these people.
Here's the thing. I don't know if he has to die or not, but he's going to do one more thing of combat, I think, because they still haven't paid off him stealing his father's Valyrian steel sword.
Right.
He's either going to, it would also be a total move for him to give it to somebody, like an actual ward, like, hey,
give it to Jorah, who my sword, no longer has one because he gave it to Jon.
That's true.
Or refused it when Jon tried to give it back.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like Jon and Dany get the two. Here's what I think that's a little too Pollyanna too, because then I'd have to go back and both of them live. But like, I think it'd be kind of cool if Dany and Jon both get the two halves of ice.
Uh-huh.
As their Valyrian, and then you start like, okay, Jorah gets Longclaw back, and then I don't know what you do with I guess Brienne would get maybe the Heart Eater or whatever the fuck, Heartsbane, she would get that blade, because I don't want to take a Valyrian sword from anybody but the Lannisters.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but again, I'm just going against my own damn predictions at this point.
But you're right, that sword is out there.
So I think he's going to, I don't think, man, I feel like Sam dying is just going to be a real bummer.
Yeah. I didn't really think about the sword. The sword is important because we know that it can kill White Walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Sam has killed a White Walker before with Dragonglass.
This piece of shitty obsidian.
Right.
He's got a Valyrian steel blade. Holy shit.
So maybe there's something to that. Maybe he could actually kill a White Walker with this sword, not really being sure that it would even work.
Mm-hmm.
Why the reveal? Why Bran revealing all this stuff to Sam? Like, I mean, I know why it literally happened, because like they're able to put two pieces of information together, and like,
right.
But like, what purpose? Who tells John? I've got so many questions. Like, I want to know exactly what happens when John arrives at Winterfell. First of all, yeah. Him and Arya reuniting is going to be freaking sweet. Second of all, him finding out if it's Aegon Targaryen stuff, is it in front of Dany? Is it like, you know, I'm very curious, because Sam doesn't like, is not great at being tactful, and Bran is like a fucking zero personality construct at this point.
Uh-huh.
And he's the type to just blurt, "Hey, Auntie Daenerys, did you know that Jon's the rightful king?" And then I don't know, hilarity ensues. Sam, so I think Sam and Gilly are both 0% chance. Baby Salmon is a 0% chance for die. They are going to be one of the sweeter endings.
I think Gilly and Baby Sam have 0%. I think Sam's up in the air. I was going to go 100. I think I'm 50 on that sort
of
thing.
I cut those odds down of that Valyrian steel.
You absolutely did.
Theon and Yara. So Theon just got forgiven of his many sins of shitbaggery by Jon Snow himself.
Yep. He beat a man half to death.
He beat an ironborn half to death and arose harder and stronger. He's taken his men and he's going to rescue his sister.
Yeah. Which sets up an inevitable confrontation between him and Euron, right?
I still don't give a shit about any of this Greyjoy stuff, man.
Huh.
I thought,
you long not cared about that.
Yeah, and I was actually kind of surprised at how caught up I got with in the moment. I think Alfie Allen sold the hell out of that kind of moment of triumph and like, you know, his second baptism and actually becoming a man, where he's just pretending to be one before. But now he's in a man and he's not. But he has no cognizable. What is that? Like, there's a lot of really cool things that I felt like I felt intellectually, if not emotionally. And I thought, you know, I admired it. But like, I don't know, like, is he going to go and single-handedly best Euron in combat and save Yara? And like, okay, let's cut to the chase. And Yara, we don't know where Yara's at.
Yeah, she's either dead or she's a captive of Euron.
Dead,
or
she's
Cersei.
Captive of Euron. She's on the Iron Island. She could be aboard Euron's flagship, the Silence, which would be kind of. But like, I don't know that I would even buy with his dramatic moment that him like taking this longboat of 20 dudes and taking on Theon's flagship or Euron's flagship.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I, again, like, this seems so utterly unconnected to anything else I care about. I'm going to go 100% chance for Theon to die, because it's cool for Jon to forgive him, but Theon brought all this shit onto himself. Arguably he suffered enough for it, but I think he's going to die, and I think Yara's going to live, because he's going to somehow save her and redeem himself in a heroic sacrifice.
I think it'd be more bittersweet if Theon dies, yeah, and saves Yara somehow.
Yeah.
And it does seem like that's the way it's going, so I think I'm with you on that.
It'd be cool if Dany's Queensguard, assuming she sits the Iron Throne and is have so, it would be nothing but women. Arya,
Grey
Worm,
out of the picture.
You got Arya. You got Brienne. Yara, Brienne, Arya.
Uh-huh.
Whew, boy, you have to give them new names, because that's confusing. Yara. Arya.
Oh, they already did.
Yeah, that's true. She's gonna go back to Asha. Since right. Where the hell is Asha at this point? Did she die? Is she dead?
Oh, I'm certain.
100% chance of her dying sometime in the last three seasons. We didn't even notice it.
She's dead.
We thought, anything else to say about that, or should we move on? Because
move on.
Now we get to the villains, Euron and Cersei and the Night King.
Dead, dead, and dead.
100%. 300% dead.
Yes.
Euron is now off to Westeros, or to Essos, rather.
There is nothing sweet about Cersei living through this. Nothing
yes.
sweet. That cannot be described as bittersweet, no matter how many people die,
but I've got,
and she lives.
I've got some things to discuss.
Okay.
So Euron's off to Westeros to save the hire. Jesus Christ. Euron is off to Essos to hire the Golden Company. That's going to be cool. That's going to be like, you know, this brand new army. You're going to be able to throw against Jon and Dany's army. The Golden Company has elephants, which I think is going to be a really cool visual element to any battle. Getting a little bit of more Lord of the Rings flavor.
It's like one boat per elephant, right? I mean, how many elephants
they
can you
swim
fit
now,
on one of those
They fucking
boats?
Swim those across the Narrow Sea.
Yeah, they just ride them like boats.
That is elephant paddle, right. Cersei claimed to be pregnant. Do you buy Cersei's pregnancy?
Okay. Let me get really crazy for a second.
And the Night King just blew a hole in the wall and he's marching south. So that's where all these people are. Cersei is like a bloated old evil spider in the middle of her web in King's Landing. Euron is off to get the Golden Company and Night King is heading south. What's your take? Go.
I think that it's very possible that Cersei has tricked Tyrion and Jaime into thinking that she's pregnant for her own nefarious purposes.
Pregnant?
Which is essentially to string Jaime along and manipulate him and keep him on her side. And also to sell this ruse to Tyrion, who thinks he's outsmarted her because he figured out that she was pregnant. She telegraphed that too much, in my opinion. So that's a possibility.
Okay. What if she's actually pregnant? She gives birth, somehow dies in the war to come,
mm-hmm.
and Dany is, in fact, barren.
This is where I was going. You stole this from me! That, I guess, tit for tat.
Okay.
I stole your King's Landing double battle in the trailer theory.
Okay.
You can steal my adopted.
Because that meets bittersweet,
Targaryen,
right?
Baby.
The
yes.
fact that the good guys are raising the evil yes. person's baby. And
it's fitting for Jon being raised that way himself. Like,
right.
Yeah, this kind of makes total sense.
Yeah, no, I think there is something there.
Is there time for that to happen?
Okay, so this is the fly in the ointment. We have been apologizing for jetpacking all over the place.
Yeah.
But it's going to be some special kind of funny if we get back to Westeros and...
An eight-week pregnancy.
There's like a 6-week old baby waiting there, right. and then people like there's like mention about oh we got to take the long arduous trip from Winterfell to King's Landing. It'll take us months by going over. Like it'll be I don't know what the fan base would do. Like if they like because the people that are left are at least tolerant of the egregious jetpacking and hand waving over any kind of concerns about actual material or money or how things cost or anything but round numbers of men and ships and all this shit. Like I think it'd literally melt people's brains if they let that play out naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any like room for unnatural? Can Qyburn do some kind of like...
Oh, no.
Like Cersei's like, I've got to get this baby out of me, Qyburn. Do some blood magic and make this thing grow in a fortnight. And then she's going to don her, I don't know, Cersei armor and go...
How many leeches does Qyburn have?
As many as he needs.
As many pots of wildfire as they had?
Yeah.
Because I think you could probably make a baby come out real fast if you had enough leeches.
Enough
leeches? Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
I would like to know how that would work anatomically.
Ask Gendry. Gendry knows. Gendry knows all about it.
Gendry thinks making babies probably involves leeches.
Probably.
I got naked with a lady. She put leeches on me. I think that's sex. Hell, uh-huh. I could be a father. Yeah, I don't know. 100% death for all these. I do think there is a little bit of intrigue with the baby. I think there is a little bit of opportunity for someone to take the place of the Night King in some kind of long-lost pack kind of situation.
I mean, the Night King has to definitely die or at least be thwarted, you know?
Yeah.
Like, his mission cannot succeed because if it does, he's the binary switch on this whole fucking story. If he lives, everyone else dies.
Sure.
If he dies, there's possibilities, right? So he has to die.
Yeah. Bonus death percentage.
There is no sweet in that bittersweet pot for a Night King who prevails.
Bonus death percentage, Gendry.
Gendry? Is there any chance that we get Gendry on the throne as the rightful heir, and then Jon up north as sort of his father, and they have that bro relationship?
That would be kind of cool.
No, it can't happen.
But it's
obviously.
Too sweet.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
So I think Gendry comes into play in event that he like to break glass in case both Jon and Dany die. If he
does have a claim.
For example, like if Dany on her deathbed, like she's dying of her wounds, or she's psychically connected to her fucking dragons, and they're all dead because I do think that there's going to be a there's another question: are the dragons going to live or die? Because like Bran, I feel like these things are too powerful to continue. Like if you have a whole other age of dragons and stuff, like that. I don't know I just think that like they're gonna try to return to status quo. I feel like there's an instance where Dany's dying on her deathbed because she's psychically connected to dragons or some shit like that, and she's wasting away. And you know everyone's fretting about the fact that there's no issue because we're also wrong on our Cersei baby prediction. and she outlines some way to democratically elect a leader, and it turns out it's Gendry. I could see something like that happening.
No way.
No?
No way.
No? Gendry doesn't sit the Iron Throne?
Yeah, it's a possibility.
As an elected monarch?
With the story you outlined, yes, it's a possibility. But
all right. I don't...
Certainly, it's like a 1% chance of anything.
0% chance? I mean,
Gendry's purpose at this point is going to be to hammer a bunch of fucking dragonglass, right? Or to at least lead up the effort in hammering a bunch of dragonglass.
Yeah, there is a scene of him, like, armoring, doing armory stuff in Winterfell.
And he made the joke last season about, like, oh, what use is there for a blacksmith? I'm going to take up a hammer and I'm going to fight with you.
Right.
Well, guess what? There's actually a lot of use for a blacksmith at this point.
You got to start smithing this glass and the weaponry, son.
What if you made a suit of armor out of dragonglass?
Holy shit. Just like in Skyrim, yes, I want some of that ebony armor.
Could the Night King even penetrate
Dragon
that
glass
with
greaves?
The with a weapon?
I think if you touched him, he just turned to dust.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
It's like going to a fight with a wasp nest and you made a suit out of Raid. Like, they got no answer for it.
Yeah, let's see that. Let's see a bull-shaped helmet made out of dragon glass.
Yeah.
And he goes in and just gores the Night King with the horns.
Hell yeah. I think we've now
got six.
And he
says, the boar gotcha.
I think we got six different people with storylines killing Night King at this point.
All at the same time.
Yeah, Bran distracts, Jon faints, Gendry gores, Arya sneaks in with the mask.
Yeah.
Okay.
God, I want to see that Photoshop. Gendry in the dragon glass boar helmet.
I do have a couple other things I want to say about, like, the have to wait to the spoiler section, which I think the first one will be next week. I don't think we're going to do one this week.
Yeah.
But because there's a couple emails I want to consider and also some other thoughts that won't be spoiled by episode one, surely. So I think it'll still be relevant. But that's all I've got. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Should we get to feedback?
No, let's do feedback.
It's a damn long episode. We do these 2 hour long Game of Thrones episodes. All right. Before we get to feedback, Jim, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's allergy season.
I've noticed.
Well,
I'm experiencing allergies at this very moment.
Yeah, it's been tough. I thought I had a cold like a week ago, but it turns out not. It's just freaking allergies. And sure enough, the trees that smell like bleachy, fishy stuff are blooming up and down my street. It's quite nice. But you know, Molecule is reimagining the future of clean air, starting with the air purifier.
Is that Molecule with a K?
That's Molecule with a K.
I've heard of them.
Cool. Unlike HEPA filters, Molecule destroys indoor air pollutants at a molecular level. It's like, that sounds like the really bad disruptor you get from Star Trek. That's like violently destroying air pollution. I like it. It completely removes this from the air you breathe. Molecule uses photoelectrochemical oxidation nanotechnology to eliminate allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, and airborne chemicals. Now, I'm thinking like oxidation means this, like the burn, right? Set on fire. I don't know what all this means, but I imagine there's nano sized dragons that constantly patrol the inside of this molecule unit, and they just incinerate with dragon fire anything that gets within their radius.
You'd think they'd want to put that in their talking points,
right?
Because it's pretty cool,
right? It's approved and tested by Qyburn himself to completely destroy things. He doesn't even know what molecules are, but he's pretty sure it destroys them at that level. And Molecule is your best defense against allergy season. Molecule has reinvented air purifier to not just collect these air pollutants. Why would you want to collect them? They're not Pokemon.
It's true.
Destroy them. Destroy these particles. Rip them apart at the molecular level. When you turn on the molecule, you're creating the purest air possible, combating allergy season by destroying these allergens in your home. You know what? Breathing clean air can help you sleep, Jim.
Don't I know it. I actually have a air purifier in my bedroom.
We need to upgrade this molecule because...
I feel real good when I wake up, and then I go to the basement, and I feel real bad.
We need a molecule down in the basement, but you can also place one... I take your shitty old HEPA filter.
Right.
Put it down here in the basement. Throw the molecule upstairs where you sleep, because if you put that in your bed, put it next to your bed, it cleans the air you're breathing, and customers have reported feeling energized after getting the best night of sleep they've had in years.
All right.
Molecule's technology is, of course, verified by science, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people. Molecule has given allergy and asthma sufferers around the country an all-new experience. And for $75 off your first order, visit molecule.com. That's molecule.com. And at checkout, enter code GOT for, again, $75 off your first order. That's molecule.com, molecule spelled with a K, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com, and enter code G-O-T to get $75 off your first order. This episode is also sponsored by Bald Move, as always, in the form of our club at club.baldmove.com. It's the only way you're going to be able to get to participate in the Instant Talk podcast. That's where we take to the microphones as soon as the episode's done airing each Sunday night. And after Jim and I talk for 15, 20 minutes, whatever we have our say, we actually turn the mics to the audience and allow people to participate through the YouTube chat feature on our live video recordings. And again, the only way to get onto that, as well as the live watch segment of the Super Serious Fan Fest, is to be a club member. It's easy to join. Go to club.baldmove.com. You can preview many of the club features for free just by going to that site, and you can always try a 30-day trial free at club.baldmove.com. Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. Also, don't forget about our forums, forums.baldmove.com. The host a lot of freewheeling Game of Thrones types discussion. First up, Wayne from California. After hearing you mention direwolves in your latest podcast, he's referring to the podcast that Anthony and I did, co-author of Gods of Thrones Volume 1 and 2. You can
still
get
that
them
too.
Now. This is not so stealthy. This is not a Faceless Men type of ad. This is very much a...
Seems premeditated.
A mountain type of ad. Godsofthrones.com is where you can get all those books and merch related. I'd give you my version of how they saved the day. It's a climactic battle of the series. The good guys and gals are losing. Suddenly, you hear a shrill cry of Winterfell, and then you hear an answering howl from over 10,000 throats. Or the hill comes the biggest little badass in Westeros, Arya, riding the back of Nymeria like the Duke in a John Ford Western or Gandalf at the Battle of Helm's Deep, followed by every fucking wolf in the continent. The day is saved. Hooray. There's not a zero chance of this, something like this happening. Like, why else other than, I guess, it's a nice character moment. Do you have Nymeria, like, you know, the whole purpose of Arya meeting Nymeria is to demonstrate that Arya's changed. She's no longer the little girl that would, you know, play games in Winterfell, and neither is Nymeria. Mm-hmm. But since you bothered to model an adult Nymeria, it would be kind of fucking awesome to have her return from River Run with her pack of she-wolves and whip some ass.
Well, I don't deny that it would be awesome. I also don't think it's going to happen.
Percentage chance of a Voltron wolf pack. What if they assembled into a massive wolf king arrangement where they
what
just...
What if Bran is actually controlling Nymeria as Arya rides him in?
Holy shit.
To battle.
All right.
Rides her in to battle, rather. I don't know what to call it at that point if Bran's controlling it.
I don't think I can be... It's Branception. I don't think I can be satisfied by this series of Game of Thrones now because it's not going to be this awesome. There's not going to be Voltron wolves with Bran forming the head. That's not going
to
happen.
You can go to gemofthrones.com and you can get my fanfic book that I wrote.
I would buy
about
that. Put that up for... Put
Bran has Nymeria being written by Arya.
Put some not safe for work stuff in there. Put it up for $2.99. I'll buy it. I will buy it.
It's 4 pages long.
It's just literally the transcript of the last 2 minutes of the podcast.
Yep.
All right. Daniel T, as we're preparing for the final season of Game of Thrones, I began thinking about who Arya might impersonate as a tactic to battle or for the purpose of an assassination. I realized that the only faces we've seen Arya use are those of the girl she gives the gift of death to at the House of Black and White, which she uses to kill Meryn Trant, and Walder Frey's. In both instances, she was directly responsible for the deaths of the people whose faces she later used. The only other face she uses is that of the serving girl at the Lannister Frey gathering to trick Walder Frey, but it's not a stretch to think that she directly killed this girl in order to take her face. My question to you is, do you think that Arya can only use the face of someone she kills directly? And if so, how might that assumption play out in the final season? Parenthetical Littlefinger, maybe? Question mark, parentheses. Also, can the faces be used more than once?
All good questions. None of which I think we have solid answers to.
No.
But let me throw this monkey in the wrench.
Okay.
It's not the term. There are a lot of faces in the House of Black and White.
Yes.
A fuckload of them. And I want to say that Jack and Hagar could probably use any of them.
Okay.
Therefore, meaning... certainly he hasn't killed all of these people personally, right?
Okay.
So... But I might be wrong about that.
A man is no one.
Might be prolific. I don't know that she necessarily has to kill... person personally, if she can kind of, because didn't she have a bunch of faces in the bag when Sansa found them? Wasn't she like, where'd you get all these faces? What are these?
Did you? Because I only watched the last two episodes of the. Okay.
I know for sure that they showed Frey.
Because that's my thing. Is like, I don't think she brought any faces with her, but I think she could lay hands on about any face. If she kills someone or like, I don't know whether like if she comes across a dead person, she can use that face. But like, if she worships the god of death, like that's all his property, right? So why, if like as long as it's not unusable, and she finds like a freshly killed corpse on the field of battle, why wouldn't she be able to peel off that face?
I don't know. I mean, the fact that there are so many faces in the House of Black and White suggests to me that they can use any face they want, whether they've killed that person personally or not.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is just me inferring that this isn't just decoration.
Yeah.
Just to make it look creepy and cool. So I don't know.
And I do have some ideas of what face to use. Unfortunately, some of this stuff is like, it's hard to believe that there's still some spoiler type of material. But
I mean,
like,
you said Jamie.
Extra. Yes, this is the spoiler. Keep talking about
Jamie's a good possibility. I think potentially even like the Hound, because we know that the Hound was at some point on her list. I think he's earned his way off of it at this point.
It seemed like another one would be Qyburn. Like, can't you see her peeling him off his laboratory? And
he gets real close to Cersei.
She pretends to be one of his children, and he kills her, and then he waltzes in I have something important to tell you, my lady. Stab. So
sure.
And then I don't know what happens to the mountain. I guess that's where Sandor has to, hopefully. Maybe he's already taken care of him.
Yeah.
You've already had the bowl. Okay, moving on to Justin I. My question is regarding Melisandre. Back in the beginning of season 6, we saw that when she took off her necklace, she became an old crone. Will we ever revisit that season, or is there just too little time to dwindle on details like that? Was curious to see whether y'all thought she might have been an old witch that could have been around during older events that predated the start of the series or not.
She the witch that told... Is she Maggie the Frog?
Ooh, that would be a fucking reveal. I mean, there's evidence. There's evidence in the books that she is a lot older than she appears to be.
There's evidence on screen.
And I think that I don't know that that's any more than just a nod and a wink to book fans. Because some of this stuff you don't have to pay off. It just is like, this is a mysterious character.
Yeah.
Who can know her mind?
Yeah.
Because like, I don't know. Like, the other thing is, like, if she dies, I think another way to pay off is she reverts to her old form. And that would have been, like, a non sequitur if we'd never seen it before. I don't know. Probably not. Like, I think people would understand if, like, her fucking gym she wears around her shatters and she turns an old woman. But, like, that's one way to pay it off, because she is going to die. We both have her 100%. So that's 400% chance of her and Varys dying, I think, if you multiply
that
them together. 800% chance if you threw Varys into the mix. It's the root of Varys squared. But Varys
but
has,
he has
no
root.
Root. It's zero. We just go, shit, we just ended the universe. Okay. I don't know it'll pay off more than that. I mean, she obviously has magic powers. Like, she is, like, I don't know if she calls herself a witch, but, like, she's been called a witch on the show, and she's got magic powers. That's a witch. So, like, I think all your math checks out there, Justin. Just don't divide by Varys's root. Fern from NYC, which character from Game of Thrones that hasn't appeared in a long time or was mentioned on the show but never appeared, would you like or be surprised to make an appearance in the final season?
No one.
For
they,
me,
they always do this.
Wait a second, you gotta let Fern start his stuff. For me, it would be Quaithe. To me, she's like Darth Maul of Game of Thrones.
Right.
She looks cool, has mysterious dropping knowledge on Jorah, and that's that. Never see her again. I wish I was going to be a big character in those 2 minutes we saw her, but I've never read the books either.
Okay, that's fair. That's a character I haven't thought about in 6 seasons, so.
But I mean, to your point, Fern, I don't think that's going to happen. If I had, like, my choice for someone to pop up in the end, I'd like to see Salladhor Saan. Like, I think that would be super fucking cool if,
the pirate,
like, like Euron's doing some last ditch to maybe escape, and Davos is called in a favor, and you see Salador with his pirate flag, like, not today, ha, 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 as he's, like, eating a turkey leg, and he's probably got a winch on his hip and a flagon of wine in his third arm he doesn't have. I think that was a cool character that I wish I saw more of.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's fun. But Quaithe is pretty solid, too. Mm-hmm. Quaithe is clearly a case of the double Ds getting a bunch of bullet points and having no fucking clue how they actually connect and punting.
Yeah.
Amber from Florida. Why the lack of Tyrion in the trailer? Perhaps a larger question, what role does Tyrion have now that Jon appears to be Dany's trusted advisor? Well, I don't know if he's a trusted advisor. That's part of why I think Tyrion is nervous about the boat sex.
No, I think this is like a central question to their relationship going into season 8 here, and I don't know.
I think he's going to be the central, like, you're going to understand he's going to be the central figure moving forward. Like, he's going to be some sort of prime minister, presidential type of, like, executive or way, way up there. I think that's what his arc is going to be.
No, he's my favorite character, so he definitely can't die, but
he's come a long way since managing the drainage cisterns of the Casterly Rock. Josh from Maine, who mentioned casually that he's been listening to us since 2011. Jesus, have we been doing this for this long?
No, he's lying. Yes, barely.
So we don't see the Night King in a trailer, right?
We see his horse's foot.
We see his horse's foot. We see the horse. We didn't see him, but the horse he rode in on.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Battle of Winterfell be the best place for this new dragon? If he has a connection with Bran that he knows they're armed with dragonglass as well as two dragons, why not take his dragon straight to King's Landing? Who's going to stop an undead dragon there? They don't have any dragonglass, and a scorpion isn't going to work. I think Bran realizes that that's what Night King is doing, and Jonny and Dan fly to King's Landing to meet him.
Jonny and Dan.
That's actually how it was written. I thought I fucked it up again, but no, you actually wrote it that way.
No, that's good.
That would leave the Battle of Winterfell completely dragonless, or even better idea if your Danny would be to take your dragons to King's Landing, sack it, and take the Gold Company for yourself. But that, so I think, I don't know that the Night King has perfect knowledge of everything that the heroes are doing, although you can make a good argument based on him chilling at the one location he needed to be to get the one thing he needed to get across the impassable barrier. That he's got more, he knows more than your average Night King about what's going on. But holy shit, if he knows everything about everything.
Yeah, no, that's a scary prospect. I also don't know exactly what his thought process is either. We haven't been privy to a lot of that. So, like, is his only real goal or the first milestone as he sees it to destroy Bran? To destroy the Three-Eyed Raven. Because if that's the case, he can go nowhere else but wherever Bran is, which now is Winterfell.
Right.
So
there's a reason he'd be drawn there.
Yeah, so maybe it's a possibility that he can't, you know, accomplish the larger, grander goal without taking out Bran. So that's kind of the assumption I'm operating under, is that Bran is the major draw here, because he has been chasing Bran for a while now. And he just needed a dragon to get to where Bran is now.
Right.
So he took a dragon and he's doing the thing. So I don't know that he's actually that concerned about the forces of men, period.
Yeah.
He's more concerned about the magical forces that might hold him at bay, which is Bran.
I also think that that's my thought as well. But another one that I could think of is that, and I think I talked about this in one of the preview podcasts. I wasn't sure if it was with you or like Anthony, but the fact that there's this mass of humanity drawn at Winterfell, like, that doesn't exist yet at King's Landing. Like, you know, the Night King looks at this as every person he kills is another person for his army.
It's a buffet.
So why wouldn't you go and amass your strength and then go proceed, you know, after you've dealt with all? And why would the Night King be afraid of dragons? Like, you know, that it's actually a weird spot to be in if you're Danny, because you got two dragons and you got to use them or else what the fuck is the point? But like one more ice spear away and then the balance of power is against you.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward. We didn't do this Death on the Watch, but the two remaining dragons, what do you feel like? Are they both going to die? Like I kind of pro-offered that I think they're both going to die because that simplifies the end game, but...
There's some weird symmetry too between Cersei and Dany if she loses all three of her children, the dragons. That's dark. That's bittersweet for you.
But Martin loves that rhyming kind of narrative shit.
Yeah. Maybe I'm kind of with you though. It does throw a weird wrench in the balance of power if you like have dragons after this is all over. Who's ever going to challenge the throne?
Also, do you think that...
But I don't know that it needs to be challenged. It's weird.
If Dany has even one dragon, is King's Landing a battle? Like, we've seen how dragons...
It depends on how many of those ballistas they have, yeah.
Did they just invent ballistas in the last 200 years or 300 years in this fucking...
I think Qyburn actually invented them in last season, yeah. I think his best weaponsmiths have been working on
no
the problem.
No one thought of a super crossbow.
Back in the Targaryen age, nobody thought about this?
I know.
When the Targaryens had fucking dragons everywhere?
Right.
Okay. Okay.
You know, the Seven Kings were asking to be taken over, if we're being honest.
Apparently.
Not even going to invent a super crossbow? Come on.
You know what? You could probably kill a lizard with a bow and arrow, right?
Yeah.
What do you think would kill, like, a really big lizard?
Oh, are you suggesting a really big bow and arrow?
You damn right
I don't think that our medieval science can harness the powers of a large bow and arrow.
Their material sciences were not that good, I will say that.
No, like, you know, trebuchet catapults, which we know they absolutely have and is essentially the same technology you'd use to build one of these. No. Failure of imagination. No super crossbows. It's forbidden.
This is the going to hyperspace of Game of Thrones.
Maybe it's like some kind of Warhammer shit where, like, ancient war, like, was won by sentient super crossbows and they're forbidden to be constructed. You just can't do it. You can't do it. It's why there's no computers in Dune. It's why there's no robots in Warhammer. You just, they had a bad experience with them.
Yeah.
Those fucking crossbows had a mind of their own, and we just burnt them all and burnt all the blueprints. And here's Qyburn fucking around with forces he does not understand.
Again.
Who sits the Iron Throne? A super crossbow. Eric from Hoboken. Is that how you pronounce Hoboken?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I feel like someone corrected me on that once, and I look at that word, and I know the English language, and it could be anything. Hmm. It could be Hobbit.
It does sound like a Lord of the Rings word.
Yeah.
It sounds like a race in Lord of the Rings.
Eric from Hobby K, New Jersey, says, the context, you've spoken about the fact that we know virtually nothing about the White Walkers beyond the Night King's vague origins as a weapon against the First Men. We don't know anything about their motivations, intelligence, culture, military strategy, or lack thereof. Although we make some smart inferences,
only
on
what we can deduce. Right? Yeah.
And of course, you also spoken about your concerns that Gurm might have about the demand for the last two books once the show is complete. Will anyone care? Will be disappointed or a chore to read once people know the ending of the saga? Taking these things into consideration, my question is whether you think it's possible there's a contract or at least some understanding between Gurm and the Double D's and HBO that details of the White Walkers are intentionally left out of the show so that Gurm can include them as a book-only exclusive.
Mm.
If I were Gurm's publishers, that's exactly what I'd push for. Should we use Jim as a litmus test? What say you, Jim? Would you read a Game of Thrones book if it was the only way you could learn more about the White Walkers?
No.
0% chance.
No. Yeah. that's not gonna happen. Like, I'm not reading, what is it, Fire and Blood about Targaryens or something. I'm not reading the lore around the show. I'm just concerned with what's in the show, so no.
I just don't think, like, there's no way the George Martin would have thought to do this before the Game of Thrones started, and why the fuck would the Double D's and HBO go back and be like, okay, we will, I mean, I guess to be nice, but it doesn't seem like... It seems like they're much more business-like usual than they're just strictly business of late. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see any of that having happened.
All right. Paul, as a Welshman, I love to hear the new-to-me story of Bran the Blessed that you discussed in last week's podcast, and couldn't believe the coincidence when the BBC aired a dramatization of the very same story just a day later with the extra mention of the benefit of the Resurrection Cauldron during the battle. So this is something that features in our book, Gods of Thrones, and we talked about it last week as one of our kind of set piece discussions, and unbeknownst to us, the BBC thought it'd be a great idea to drop a dramatization of it. He said it's a nice change of pace to be sending audio your way, and he sent us a link to the program on the BBC. I'm actually going to include that link if you were want to know more about Bran the Blessed that we talked about last week and how he might connect to the real life Bran. Because Bran the Blessed, just to make a very long story short, is a mythical figure that ends up getting his head cut off and being buried underneath the Tower of London, facing France, eternally vigilant against the return of England's enemies. Anthony and I were speculating how that could be a tie in to, like, Bran's ultimate fate, which seems like you subscribe to without knowing the potential connection to Bran the Blessed.
Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of connections to crows in that myth. There's a lot of that's the kind of stuff you can get.
It's because it's good storytelling.
Stealth ad number 7, godsofthrones.com, if you want to know more about that. And I will link this this note. I haven't got to hear it because I just saw this before we started the show, but I'm going to listen to it on the way home. I'm excited. So thank you for that, Paul. Also, nice try to get me to pronounce Welsh words. I learned my lesson with Hoboken. I'm not, and that's my own language. I'm not going anywhere near that stuff. Anna M, can you guys talk about the scene where Jamie says to Bronn in season 5, episode 4, "I want to die in the arms of the woman I love"? Whose arms will he die in season 8, Brienne's or Cersei's?
Definitely not Cersei's anymore.
Boy,
I think he's seen her true colors.
But he's loved, I mean, like, so he's loved her since he was born, essentially, if you believe their mythology. I don't think, like, even though that he's walking away from her, I don't think he stopped loving her. I mean, not to get a little too George Jones, but I think that he'll stop loving her the day he dies, maybe truly, fully. But no, because the thing is like, the only way I see that happening is like if it's like a murder-suicide or, like, Jaime dies in the attempt to kill Cersei and they kind of collapse in each other's arms because, like, man, I don't want to see Cersei surviving an assassination attempt by Jaime and then cradling him and crying or whatever. I don't even think she'd cry. She'd be cackling with glee, insane glee.
Yeah.
So, since I do think it's a 100% chance Jaime dies, I think it would be bittersweet as fuck for him to do that in Brienne's arms on a battlefield.
Sure.
With a lot of watery eyes and talking about loyalty and oaths, and you really know the subtext is they're talking about fucking. That's how I'm going to see it through the lens of shipping.
A lot of sword metaphors, sheets.
A lot of swords, yep. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Just one last time, put my sword in its... No, okay.
Talking about quenching the sword and all sorts of things.
Oh, we're going to talk
about... It gets loot on the battlefield.
The legend of Nisa this week on this... next week on a spoiler cast. Okay, that is the podcast. We made it through. We still have a couple emails I'm saving for a spoiler edition of next week. Thanks for everybody sending in. It's already getting hard picking out the emails. Thanks for everybody that sent stuff in. We will be back. Boy, it's just going to be crazy from here on out. Sunday night.
Yeah.
We're going to come back at the end of this. So, like, probably around 10 p.m. or a little bit after that Eastern time, we'll be taken to the internet at baldmove.com doing the instant take. That will be available for the club members to watch live, as well as the instant talk, where we actually invite you to come on the YouTube's chat and submit us questions, and we'll answer as many as we can on air. Of course, Tuesday we'll have the full edition of our podcast that comes out, and then Friday we'll have the spoiler edition, and that's going to be happening all throughout the run of Game of Thrones. Don't also forget that we're doing a super serious fan fest, the film fest fantasy edition, where Jim and I are talking about all the various cheesy 80s, 90s, and early 2000s fantasy films that we've seen and loved over the years. Do you know which one the first one's going to be?
Conan the Barbarian.
We're starting with Conan the Barbarian, and we've got a live watch for the club members. We got a podcast for everyone that just wants to talk about Conan and swords and sandals, and there's kind of a dragon in that, I guess, a legless, a great worm, I guess. Yeah. You would call it. It's not exactly a dragon.
Okay.
But yeah, we're going to kick things off the Super Serious Film Fest with Conan. We're excited for you guys to hear that. We're just going to be having a Game of Thrones long celebration of all things fantasy here at baldmove.com. We will see you Sunday night for the premiere of the finale of the final season of Game of Thrones. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.